It's 7:02. We will call this meeting to order. Will everybody please rise for the invocation of Pledge of Allegiance? Our most gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing us here this evening. Thank you for everybody that has come. Please be with our residents. Please guide this meeting this evening. Please be with our employees. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please be seated. The City of Kirby is dedicated to delivering excellent municipal services to our community in a fiscally responsible manner. Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Here.
Councilmember Grant?
Here.
Councilmember Lehman?
Here.
Councilmember Wilson?
Here.
Councilmember Alvarado?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge? Mayor Pierce?
Here.
We have a show.
Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge did indicate that she would not be here this evening. We will move to item 5, citizens' participation. We have 4 individuals signed up this evening. The first one is Chris Garza regarding the stoplight at Ackerman and Benzingelman.
Good afternoon, Council. I just wanted to remind everyone of the projects I proposed last week at the Council meeting in Sterling Park, just to kind of throw it back out there to make sure you guys haven't forgotten about it, or to at least let me know if it's going to be handled or if you'd like for us to do it, because Kirby community wouldn't mind volunteering to do it. So if you guys need the plan that I had, I can email it to you, okay? But what I really want to talk about today is a safety concern that the community has brought to my attention. I would like the city to discuss placing a stoplight at Ackerman and Benzingelman. After speaking with some residents, we came to a conclusion that that stated intersection is very difficult to maneuver, and that it's an accident waiting to happen, if a few haven't already happened already. Besides, the traffic in that area may cut down on big rigs running through Ackerman as a shortcut down 78, which would ultimately preserve the road now and in the future when it gets fixed. Since that intersection doesn't line up on Benzingelman, it actually creates a little opportunity to drive all the way across, which makes it really difficult to go across Ackerman from there. It should be something I think we should discuss or consider, and I hope to get it on the agenda for a future meeting. That's it.
Thank you. All right, the next one we have is Miss Willie Mae Clay regarding the bus stop and accessibility and businesses.
Yes, okay. Yes, ma'am.
All right.
That's a new item.
Good evening, everyone. Yeah, I'm so anxious to come to the next council meeting. I came last week. And I was the only one in the parking lot with a car. So I called the police department. I was told, no, the meeting is next week. But anyway, I didn't waste my time. I went inside the restaurant that's been at this location for years, at 5567 Old Seguin Road. It has changed management I don't know how many times, and it has a new name, but the building is still there, 5567 Old Seguin Road. Well, I guess you would say it's at the intersection of Ackerman and Old Seguin. You can get on the landing, but you can't get inside the restaurant. It's been like that for years. And I've informed the previous owner, nothing has happened. So when I went there last week, I informed the present, the present tenant. Let me use that terminology, tenant. Because the person who owns that whole area, the store and the restaurant, those two entities are owned by the same person, by the person at the store. So I left a note. According to the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was passed 1990, July 26, 1990, you need to put something in writing, and I did. I did last week. And so I purposely went over there this evening. There's no CNET. Still can't get in a restaurant. So I had to eat my bing and cheese taco outside. You know? And that reminded me of the civil rights movement, where people were denied opportunities to go in. So anyway, I'm dealing with that. My position is anybody in the city of Kirby should not operate a business here unless it's accessible. I don't mean just a landing. I mean getting inside the building. And I know that the owner received the note because I went over to the store and received confirmation. So you have the address. You know there's a place here that I can't get into. Enough with that. I'm mad. I don't want to demonstrate. The other thing, I thank Gilbert, is that Solace, the person for Public Works. He met me at my home on August the 20th for the purpose of going to that bus stop that Via restored. Via put it back in October of last year. And I need, persons with disabilities need that platform put back. And this is something Gilbert's working on. And I'm going to collaborate with him. I'm going to demonstrate to him. I'm going to take a bus and demonstrate how I get off a bus and let him see how steep that is. That platform was there when that bus stop was there originally. It was a platform that Kirby put there. Once that bus stop was removed, that platform was removed. And so I'm asking that it be returned, put back, so when people get off the bus or get on the bus, it will be facilitated. Right now it's very difficult, and it's somewhat dangerous to get on and off the bus because the infrastructure is so low, and once the ramp comes down off the bus, it's awfully steep to get on and off the bus. So that's what we're working on. And I thank Gilbert for not dropping the issue, but working with me and letting me demonstrate and see what the problem is. And I appreciate the council listening to me and being patient. We will resolve the problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Clay. BJ Voigt regarding the community garage sale and to clarify some information.
Good evening, Council, and everybody in the audience. I will be participating in the Kirby Community Garage Sale October 11th through the 13th. Some residents may not have enough items and or time to participate. Perhaps they would consider donating their items to help the Kirby community. I would be happy to take the items and mark those items as proceeds to fund Kirby community projects. A suggested flyer would be as follows, and I did email this to everybody, and they do have it, and there may be some changes, but we're working on it. Multifamily garage sale under the carport at my house, October 11th through the 13th. Items listed, whatever comes in. If you would like to donate any usable items, with all proceeds to help fund the Kirby community projects listed below, bring them to the address on the flyer, Thursday, October 10th from 4 to 8. Please have all items marked with prices. In the community projects, I will get with the Kirby Fire Department, the Kirby Police Department, and Kirby Animal Services and purchase what they think they would need. And then we will take pictures of the items and post them on the pages so that all the community members that have donated their items can see what was purchased and what it can help the community with. Okay, and then I'm going to contact the Disabled American Veterans to pick up any items that are not sold. If your donated items do not sell and you want them back, they must be picked up from my house on that Sunday between 3 and 7. Okay, this one, I'm not real sure I should be saying this, but it hit. When everything was going on the Kirby Community Facebook page, I made a statement that, and this is a rumor on the street that three people came and said to me. Three people have approached me and said they were questioning my comment on Facebook saying that my mom's memorial, I did in lieu of flowers. So I'm going to read the memorial part. If you would like a copy, I have extra. I know there were at least two donations in her memory made. A special moment in her life was when Santa came by on the fire truck and Kevin would wish her a Merry Christmas on the intercom. The memorial for my mother, in lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Kirby Fire Department, the address listed, and another one. So I just want to clarify, if anybody wants the copy of my mother's memorial, they're more than welcome. And also, my dad was a volunteer fire department. If you go up to the fire department, he's in the middle, he's on the middle plaque in the middle section at the bottom, Gusman Voigt. Thank you, everybody, for your time.
All right, the next one is Sharon Schuler regarding the Springfield development, which is an agenda item for 9L. Would you like to speak now or wait till that? Okay. All right, so we will come back to you. All right, so that concludes item 5, citizens' participation for now. We will move to item 6, consideration of and action on the minutes for the regular meeting minutes of August 22nd, 2019, and the public hearing special meeting of August 29th, 2019. I will entertain a motion.
Mayor, I move that we accept the minutes for regular meeting August 22nd, 2019, and the public hearing special meeting August the 29th, 2019.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Wilson, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to accept the regular meeting minutes of August 22nd and the public hearing special meeting minutes of August 29th. Is there any discussion? All in favor, please raise your right hand. Did you get all that, honey? All right, those minutes pass. We will move to item 7A, delinquent utility accounts collection report from McCreary, Veselka, Bragg, and Allen, PC attorneys at law. We have Ms. Catherine Torrance here and Steve's here as well. The city entered into an agreement with this law firm to collect delinquent utility accounts, so they will be providing a report of the collection efforts to date.
Thank you, Mayor. Fellow Councilman, I'm pleased to be here. You should be getting a copy of what I'm looking at. I'll kind of run through it and help explain it to you. Just kind of a brief historical overview of what we're doing. We received your first file on March 25th, 194 accounts totaling of approximately $40,000. We received a second file of older cases, July 24th, 383 accounts, approximately $75,000. Just a summary of the pages. We'll go through these pages in just a moment. Just a summary of those pages. Past 5 months, we've mailed over 520 letters and made over 750 phone calls. 11 accounts have been paid in full for $1,500, and 13 accounts have been resolved other ways, non-monetarily. So, actually, total resolved is 3. So 11 have paid, 2 have been recalled from collection or whatever policy might be, which is not unusual. Accounts are closed both monetarily and non-monetarily on a regular basis usually. The first page that you have is just kind of a summary of the activity for the year. 577 cases have been accounts have been placed, total of almost $116,000. To date, we don't have anybody with partial payments. As I said earlier, 11 accounts have been paid in full at this time, and approximately $1,540. Two accounts have been canceled by the city, and so a total resolution of about $1,900 so far. The next page, just the statistics, is another pretty way to describe what I just said. Kind of give you an idea of what we're working with. Perhaps the most important page is the last page. Out of the 577 accounts that we're working with, 494 accounts have at least one good phone number. What we call a good phone number is we have not been told it's bad. And we have not had an operator intercept that says it's a bad number, non-working number, or something like that. That does not necessarily say that we've talked to somebody. Accounts with no phones or bad phones only, 70, for a total of 564. Good addresses, out of the 577 accounts, we have 121 good addresses. Those are determined after the first mailing, how many we get back in return mail, so we can begin the skip tracing process. We had 371 accounts that have a bad address or an incomplete address, and 62 accounts have a bad address or a returned address. The bad address or the incomplete address are being actively skipped to try to figure out the best way to correct the address. Return addresses are also being skipped just to find the next best address we can find. And then we have 10 outside of Texas addresses for no particular reason that's listed. See the dollar values as they break down. The age of the account, less than a year old, we have 55 accounts that are less than a year old. Accounts that are 1 to 3 years old, we have 274. 3 to 5 years old, 229. And more than 5 years, 6. I want to come back to the age of the account. Age at the time of placement, less than a year, 128. 1 to 3 years, 212. 3 to 5, 218, and more than 5, 6. Go back up to age of where this says age of offense. It should say age of account. Statute of limitations in Texas is 4 years on accounts like this from the date of delinquency. The date of delinquency is determined by the city. It's a date we get in the file when they're turned over to us. The accounts that are more than 4 years old are not being worked. We cannot legally chase them down and go after them. So those accounts have been put on hold in our system. We will be sending you a report of those specific accounts so you'll know who those are and how many they are. It's reasonable to say that every day an account goes past 4 years. Maybe not every day, but it's certainly possible that the accounts can be 3 years and 12 days and then 3 years and or three years and 11 months and 30 days from now they would be 4 years old. We will report back to you those that we received that were more than four. We did work them at least one time to try to find to see if we could contact them. We will also tell you over time, the next report will show you the rest of them that have the next set that go off the statute of limitations. You'll also see with that what we did to try to find these people, what we did to try to contact these people, if we found them or contacted them, how many times we talked to them or how many times we mailed them letters. I'm not telling you that you have to write them off to bad debt and just get rid of them. I'm just telling you, you can't enforce collections on those after 4 years. Quick and dirty. Have any questions?
Would you just, for the sake of everyone who's here, explain the process that you use again, like first step, second step?
When we get the file in with the new accounts, when we first started, let's just start there. We ran the file through a system that where we can discover whether the address is complete. We don't know that if it was good or not, but it was mailable. Name, address, phone, a name, address, and zip code, and the zip code matched the address. Then we mail. Those that we can't mail on, we give to our skip tracers and the people who can fix those accounts, and they start to work on those. We mail. The first letter we send out is a letter that the debtor has the opportunity to dispute the debt. They have 30 days. They have an opportunity to dispute the debt, so we put the case on hold, for 30 days. And we have 10 days to get them the amount of information that they need, and we get that from the city, and we tell them, yes, it's due, here's why, we can show you the last bill, we can show you the billing address, we can show you the account, all this kind of thing. After the 30 days is up that they have to be able to dispute the debt, if we have phone numbers, those phone numbers go on our calling and we start trying to get a hold of these people on the phone. Letters start getting mailed every 30 days. To attempt to just get these people on the phone, talking to them, get them to do something. All along in the process, we discover bad phone numbers, we discover bad addresses, we discover whatever. We are continually looking for people all the time. That's probably the largest amount of activity we do on your accounts is skip tracing. Trying to find people, trying to find the best way to get a hold of them. These types of accounts, people have a way of not necessarily hiding, but they can move in with family members or they can have family members do things for them or whatever, and we kind of lose them in the shuffle and we lose them track of them for a while. So it's a little harder to find these people. So we spend an awful lot of time looking. We have individuals who are skipping, just looking, typing the name and looking for people. Then we have also a waterfall process that we use and we send through electronic processes. And as I related to you on the last time I was here, we have databases that we can bounce names off of. Something as simple as pizza delivery databases, animal registration databases, other places that give permit water, grant water service. We have databases for that. There's all kinds of ways to look for people. But even in our day and time, people can sort of drop off the radar for a while anyway. But so we spend most of our time looking for these people. As we get a new address or as we get a new phone number, a whole new level of communication begins. The skip tracers request the letter. or they place the new phone number on the account. The account is moved to the top tier of the call list, so it's called, so we'll find out if that's a good number or not. We have spent an awful lot of time dealing with federal laws and state laws on these things. We have to know if it's a cell phone or if it's a home phone or a landline. We have to know exactly who we're talking to. We can't be talking to just anybody about this. There's a third-party rule that we can't let somebody else know that this individual owes this debt. So there's an awful lot of hoops we have to jump through as well. And so it makes this type of debt a little harder to collect, but it's certainly collectible. It just takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. Any other questions?
And what is the delinquency time that the city passes on? 90 days. And that's, of course, after those individuals have exhausted, or is this specifically ones that have moved? I mean, they could be current residents, correct?
Yeah, well, we initially did it strictly for a closed, or we could call accounts we were writing off.
Right.
But then we do have the option to turn over them as soon as they become delinquent, which is our intent going forward.
Right. Quicker we can get them, the quicker we can get in front of these people. At least that's been our experience. We get them a year out, or you know, anywhere close to a year out, the chance of success just takes a huge nosedive.
I was just curious if it was could potentially be current. Okay. Is there any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, I will close the regular meeting at 7:29 and open the public hearing. This will be on the item 8A, public hearing for the Crime Control Prevention District Fiscal Year 2019-2020 budget. This is a hearing for the public. This isn't discussion for council. If there is anybody who wishes to speak on the Crime Control Prevention District Fiscal Year 2019-2020 budget, please approach the podium. And I would like to mention that the Crime Control did have a public hearing as well, so they have had one at their meeting as well regarding this budget. Right. Anyone? All right, well, I will close the public hearing at 7:30 and reconvene the regular meeting with item 9A, discussion and possible action on Crime Control Prevention District Fiscal Year 2019-2020 budget. I will, Chief, will you be taking this one? Are you going to be taking this one?
Unless our vice president wants to.
I believe you're going to be taking this one.
Want a quick pass of the buck?
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. Thank you for this opportunity to address you. For the past couple months, I have been, myself and the Crime Control District have been working diligently to come up with a budget for this coming fiscal year. Our budget is, for the most part, is going to remain unchanged from last year. There are some modifications that we did make to it. The first things I would like to point out is the Crime Control District has passed or agreed to include money for certain items that are designed to be replacement items for equipment that officers have with them right now. One item in particular is we're going to include just over $6,000 to have four replacement tasers on standby. Some of the tasers that we have now are getting up in years. We have had two that have not passed their internal inspections, taking them out of service. So these tasers will be meant to replace ones that are currently being used, while the ones that are out of service are sent back to either destroyed or repaired. Taser has a very strict policy on if a taser cannot be repaired, they destroy it in-house so that it doesn't wind up accidentally getting used. The next item is for an amount just over $3,400. This is going to be used to procure five more body cameras just to have these on backup. These cameras are very rugged. They're very durable, but like all technology, they're subject to failure if they get bounced around a little too much with age. So that will allow us to purchase five body cameras. Additionally, we are looking at doing a large increase to our training budget, and this is to help offset the city's budget to address additional non-funded training mandates that have come out since the last legislative session. Depending on the skill level of the officers, some of the junior officers are looking at having 15 mandated courses, some of them as long as 40 hours, crisis intervention and classes like that. Classes are expensive to send the officers to, so the board agreed to include an increase to that line item to help offset. That line item is going to increase from, they have given me 500 in the past years, we're going to increase that to 5,000. For capital improvement items, we stuck with a program that we started with last fiscal year. The board was very, very interested and dedicated to providing equipment to the officers. So rather than look for large ticket items like they very generously have bought us a vehicle in the past, they have replaced mobile data terminals for us, they've replaced in-car video systems for us. Past 2 years, they wanted to do something that the officers would use personally. So as you remember, last year we started a program where the Crime Control District funded the purchase of, for the first time ever, department-issued handguns so that we're all uniform. Some of the officers were using handguns they supplied on their own, bought out of a pawn shop. They've had them 10 years. We don't know the history of the weapon before that. So we do have an inspection process with that current weapon that we've issued all the officers. So this year we wanted to continue on with that personal equipment that the officers use themselves. So we have a list, and basically in a nutshell, what we're looking to purchase for the officers is all the equipment that they will wear on their duty belts. This will include everything from handcuffs to the belt themselves, handcuff holders, batons, pepper spray, flashlights. For an officer to go out and purchase that on their own, depending on the make model of the equipment they get, it can run upwards to $2,000 to completely outfit what an officer wears on duty. That does not include, that $2,000 doesn't include the cost of the handgun, which in our case was just over $400 per gun. It doesn't include the magazines, the holsters, the ammunition. It also doesn't include tasers, radios, body cameras, and all the other equipment that we require them to wear over and above. This money will also include a helmet and an outer ballistic vest. And the purpose for these is, just last night we had a active shooter class in here. We are seeing more in Kirby. Where we're taking stolen AR-15 weapon, AR-15 type weapons off the street, AK-47s, handguns. We grabbed a group of people out of San Antonio just last week that were in possession of rifles that were stolen out of an Academy sports store in San Antonio the week before. So these weapons are out here. What a lot of people do not realize is the vests that the patrolmen wear under their uniform is only rated for handgun ammunition. In some cases, it will stop up to a 45 caliber or a 44 Magnum 9mm, but it is not going to stop a rifle cartridge or that type of caliber, much like you see AK-47 is a 308, which is pretty much a standard hunting rifle caliber in Texas. It will not stop the ammunition out of an AR-15 and those type weapons. So, and because these particular items have to be specifically fit to the officer, we have included the sizing for that equipment as well. And that is not something they will be wear all the time. That's something they'll have to be put on right before they respond to an incident. And they'll be carried in a special bag in the vehicle so that it's protected and doesn't get scuffed up and damaged. So to outfit all of the paid officers, now this does not include our reserve force, this is just the paid city employees, we are expecting that number to be just over $26,600. So that number combined with the equipment, other equipment purchases and the increases to training. I also did forget that operational budgets, we're going to increase that by $1,000, and we're going to increase community service programs from $4,000 to $5,000 to help have funding to be involved in more community. So all total, that will put our budget for next year at just over $51,000. $240, which is actually a little bit less than what we have budgeted for in the previous years. They have been, depending on the year, anywhere from $55,000 to $60,000. So that is my presentation, unless you have any questions.
I did want to make sure everybody understood, just in case somebody didn't, that the Crime Control Prevention District is separate from the city's budget. The Crime Control Prevention District was voted on to continue by the voters in May. So there is a quarter cent of the existing sales tax that does that goes directly to that district board. So this budget that Chief Boyce is talking about is strictly from that quarter percent tax that the voters voted to continue this for the next 5 years, just in case there was any questions, since we are doing another budget information today. You may have questions? Great. Thank you. All right, so staying with 9A, discussion and possible action on the Crime Control Prevention District fiscal year 2019-2020 budget. I will entertain a motion.
I make a motion to accept the budget.
Second. We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Apodaca, to accept the Crime Control Prevention District fiscal year 2019-2020 budget. Is there any discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right, the Crime Control Prevention District fiscal year 2019-2020 budget does pass. Thank you for the board's involvement with that. We will move to item 9B, discussion of possible action on an interlocal cooperation agreement with the Alamo Area Metro SWAT team. Again, Chief Boyce will be...
Again, thank you for the opportunity. As you know, in the last fiscal budget, the Crime Control District gave me an amount of money to seed a program for us to get back involved with the Alamo Area Regional SWAT team. Now, many years ago, 1999 to be exact, we started that program with seven other cities in the Judson Independent School District, just because Bexar County and San Antonio were so busy with their own, they were not able to regularly assist these member cities when we needed them. So we were actually a founding member of that organization. We actually came into existence formally in the year 2000. Approximately 4 years ago, we made a decision, and it was a financial decision that we made to again work with Bexar County Sheriff's Office. Unfortunately, the Sheriff's Office has been so busy that out of the last five times that we have needed support from that organization, they were only able to support us once. All right. So I did talk to the team. They were agreeable to readmitting the city of Kirby. So I went with the Crime Control District for the seed money. And they have, at that time, they gave us the money for first round of annual dues, which I'll get into explanation on that here in a little bit. But in addition to the dues, they gave me enough money to assist with officer selection, the specialized training that he needs, and as well as the equipment that he will need for that that position. So moving on from there, each of the seven member cities had to agree to readmit us. And this is why, even though we have been working on it for the better part of a year now, it is just now coming up to you for review, because the ILA or MOU had to go before six member cities. We are the seventh. Had to go to their city attorneys for review, their city councils, their city managers. So we had to do that six times, and that is the cities and the school district. So mid last month, we finally got the signed document by all city managers and I think it's the president of the school board whose signature appears on the document. So at this point here, it's time to bring it to you for review, questions, and for me to ask that you consider approving the document so that we can reestablish that service to this community.
And just to clarify, it's City of Alamo Heights, Judson ISD, City of Windcrest, Selma, Converse, Live Oak, and UC. That is in the group.
In Judson ISD.
Yeah,
the And those are, along with us, the original founding members of the team.
So do we need to act on this, Mayor?
Yes, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion we accept the rejoining, I guess is the way to say it.
Yes, readmittance.
Readmittance to the SWAT team.
We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Apodaca, to enter into an interlocal cooperation agreement with the Alamo Area Metro SWAT team. Is there any further discussion? Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
No.
Yes.
Thank you.
Item 9C, update, discussion, and possible action on an Eagle Scout project at basketball court on city-owned property adjacent to the Kirby Senior Center. Darren is here. Go ahead, Darren. No, you're not Darren. Sorry, you are not Darren. I have an email also from Darren. Sorry. This is Anthony. Sorry. Who I presume will be coming up too soon.
Good evening, Council. We met 2-3 months ago about discussion of continuing the project for the park near. I'm sorry, my mind's going blank. The park near the Kirby
Senior Center.
Yes. And I went to Boy Scout Council, and they asked me to bring more detail and rediscuss with them the project, and rediscuss with you the project on what I'm doing, what's going to happen, and the details that are going to be. So earlier in the week, I handed everyone a paper, I believe, where discussing
Take your time, you're good.
I'm sorry.
Good.
It was a paper discussing like the laws above, like you can't take advantage of me or something like that. Yeah, the procedures of what I'm gonna do, like this is how I'm gonna do it, and if you wanna change, you have to come talk to me, or you have to personally like come to me for it to change. But overall, nothing's really changed with the project. I'm just doing 3 10x10 concrete slabs, still with the benches on top of them, and the two 4x4 concrete slabs. We're still doing that. Anything that is left over will go to City Council. Your budget, materials, anything that's left over goes to y'all. And that's pretty much it. And that's, yeah. Thank you for your time.
Do you have information on that? So we just need to. So you're just clarifying.
Yes, it's just to clarify.
The procedure.
We will start the project possibly this later in this. Is it September? Yeah, later in this September. We'll start donation letters. It'll go out to Lowe's, Home Depot's, and SSS Steel. And then we'll begin our project. And it should start later this month.
But the scope of your original project hasn't changed. Is that correct?
There's nothing that's really changed. It's just a reclarification that Scout Council wants me to do. So I'm just informing all of you that this is what's going on, and we're going to begin the project very soon.
So we don't, since we've already accepted it, we won't.
Just
we
reclarification,
don't
yeah.
It's just a clarification of what the project is. Okay.
Just go ahead and dig it up and put it down.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I have that. Does he need it before? Okay. Sorry, I'm going to take a second to find this form so he doesn't have to stay here for the...
Well, it's there somewhere.
It is. Oh, I think this is it.
Engineering alone is yeah. Right.
I've signed the paperwork that you need, and so our city secretary is going to make a copy, and that way if you choose to go, you don't have to sit through the whole thing waiting for me to sign that paperwork. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
All right, we will move to item 9D, discussion and possible action awarding a contract for the Hickory Hill reconstruction project. We have Mr. Craig Wilson from M&S Engineering, and he will discuss the bid award recommendation.
Good evening, Council, Mayor, and City staff. I'm here tonight to help you with the award for the Hickory Hill project. We advertised in August and received bids on August the 29th and opened them publicly. You should have in your packet a bid tabulation that details each item that was on the list to be bid and total of each prospective bidder's proposal. One thing I want to point out on your, if you have that bid tab in front of you, the engineer's OPCC, opinion of probable construction cost, That number of 607,000 is wrong. That's my fault. I copied it from a previous job and did not correct it. The correct engineer's OPCC number is $460,500. And the reason I want to bring that up, that estimate shows that the bids that were received fall in line with what we expected. So looking at the bids, R.L. Jones Company was the low bidder on this project at $429,533. The next bidder was 2.78% higher than that. The third place bidder was 5% above that. And the last place bidder was significantly larger than that. This project is funded as a community development block grant program. So it is encouraged that the city council award it to the lowest bidder. That is the process that they adhere to. The construction contract is supposed to run, I believe it's 300 days to substantial completion and 330 days to final completion. If there's any other questions about this bid, I'll be happy to answer them for you.
I'm sorry, can you just repeat the 300 days? I didn't understand.
This from beginning to substantial completion is 300 days.
Okay.
So that's at substantial completion, the contractor says, I'm finished with pretty much everything but very small tasks. And at that time, they ask the city and the engineer, us, to walk the job and make a punch list of items that remain to be done. And then they have the next 30 days to complete that, to finalize the project.
Okay, and as it was mentioned, this is a CDBG funding project. The city was awarded $420,912. The bid is $429,533. So there is an amount that the city will have to add to that. So,
and just to be clear, with CDBG funding, the Bexar County will reimburse the city 80% of construction cost only. The city must pay 100% of all engineering costs. So even though they funded the $429,012, there is a possibility if the project comes in lower than that, that they are only going to reimburse 80% of what the actual construction costs. So they're on that. We don't get the money up front. It's in our budget. We pay it, and then we submit reimbursement requests to the county. Because, again, it is a CDBG project, we have two awards below it.
And this bid award for Hickory Hill, it's Harris Road to Taub, so.
Yes.
All right, so I will, if there's no other questions for Mr. Wilson, I will entertain a motion.
Mayor, I move that we accept award the bid to Hickory Hill Road to R&L Jones. Construction.
Yeah, company.
Company for the bid amount of $429,533.
We have a motion by Councilmember Wilson.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Grant to award the Hickory Hill Road reconstruction to R.L. Jones, L.P. in the amount of $429,533. Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Asadaka?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layden?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. And they can start, when do we project that to start?
Now that you've awarded it, we'll notify the contract. I'll notify them in writing tomorrow, and we'll set up a pre-construction meeting, and I'll have all the construction documents, contract documents ready to go. The city manager and I will set a time probably next week to get all of those documents together and signed, everybody in the same room, and get this started as soon as possible.
And then once we have that date, if you can send it to the masses. Okay, thank you. All right, item 9E, discussion and possible action on awarding a contract for the 2018 street bond project for phase one. Again, we have Craig Wilson, and he will speak to this item as well.
Thank you, Mayor. Same sort of deals. Street bond projects, it's going to be a little more complicated because with that, the previous project had a specific process where you needed to follow the low bid. With the street bond projects, the city has asked us to do more of a weighted scoring process where it's not all completely low bid. We take in some other factors and weigh it into the equation to come up with a score and then make a recommendation on that full score. So on August the 29th, we received bids. The engineering estimate was $177,300. The low monetary bid came in from ACECO. It was $147,000, $147,157.90. The second bidder was J&P Paving Company. Their bid was $152,002.94. The third bidder was 20% above the low bid. When we took the bid packages back from each of the bidders and evaluated the information that they submitted based on what we asked for scoring criteria, myself and another project manager in our office scored the proposals and came up with a score, and then we presented the numbers to the city manager. Those scores moved the number two monetary bidder up to the number one position. So J&P Paving, their average score was 85.7, where ACECO, their average score was 80. So that puts us in a position to recommend J&P Paving for the bid to be awarded this contract, even though their bid is $4,845.04 higher than the low bid. I'd be happy to explain this process a little further if I need to.
If you would, that would be great, since this is a new process for most all of us, and that way everybody else has an understanding as well.
Okay, let me pull out the specification page and give you a quick overview of what the criteria was that we used. This is, I'm not sure how new this is, but it is relatively new. Several cities are looking toward this system. I can't remember, there's two areas that we look at when we do projects like this for funding. The typical one everybody thinks of is low bidding. It's in one section I think it's in the local government code. And this new part is chapter 2254, I believe, in the administrative code. It allows the cities to have more flexibility in picking items that they want to use to evaluate bidders. And it's typically termed a best value bid. So cities are obviously looking for a way to get the best bang for their buck, and this best value bid system is what the legislature has come up with. There's four items that we put together, and item one was a qualification statement. It was worth 6 points, and we asked for resumes and personnel experience that were relevant to the job. We asked if the contractor had any vendor holds, and we also asked if they had any liens against them. Item two was previous experience. We had a weight of 15 out of 100 points for that. They were able to submit up to 5 projects in the last 6 years. We awarded 1.5 points for each 5 projects that were relevant to the construction that we're going to do. And if they had a recommendation letter from related to that project, we added another half a point to that. Item three was ability to meet the schedule. We had 9 points allocated to that, 3 points for providing a construction schedule, 3 more points for presenting their current workload, and 3 more points for giving us a list of equipment with ages and values. And that, like I said, that was worth 3 points. Item four was the monetary bid price, and we gave that weighting a 70-point weighting out of 100. So that's the bid evaluation criteria in a nutshell. J&P Paving did a great job. They submitted what we asked. ACECO, the one area they fell short in was for their past project experience. Every project they listed was currently ongoing, and we specifically said in our instructions that we wanted completed projects. So that's where they didn't get any of the points for that category, and that's what made the difference.
And do y'all, when y'all are looking for qualifications and those kinds of things, do y'all also seek their ability to secure subcontractors?
It's something we can't add to it.
I was just curious if that was something, because I know with our other project, you know, that just seems to be another hold, is that they can't secure subcontractors, and obviously that's an important part. So I was just curious if that was part of that.
Wasn't part of this evaluation, but it's certainly something we can add to future evaluations if you would like.
Right. And can we also, since it is phase one, would you also explain about the project itself as far as what phase one is?
Phase one is four streets. Let me make sure I tell you the right ones. It was a kind of a quick and dirty project, something that we can get done quickly. The construction time for this phase is going to be 60 days to substantial completion and 90 days for final. So we'll get this done in this calendar year, unless we get a whole bunch of rain. So the first street is Harris Road from Ackerman through the Hickory Hill intersection, the jogged intersection. The second road is Peppermint Lane. It's at Ackerman Road. It goes west. I've got it going through the Gaiety Lane intersection. I know we have some drainage problems there. We're going to see if we can work with the contractor and try to alleviate some of the drainage issues at that intersection. The third street is, I can never say it right, I think it's File, P-F-E-I-L. So it's a single block between Ackerman and Hennecke Street.
Hennecke.
Oh, I'm glad you're here to help me through this.
We just had a conversation about the streets and how to say them, and that was just two of the ones that we were talking about.
And I got them both, huh?
The
last street is Kirby Heights Boulevard, just north of here. It's the whole length of the street from Ackerman to the east, or yeah, eastern end.
Right. Are there any other questions? Staff have any questions? All right. I will entertain a motion for awarding a bid on the 2018 street bond for phase one.
Mayor, make a motion we accept the bid of J&P Paving Company for the street bond of 2018 for phase one in the total amount of $152,244.
Easy for you to say.
94.
Is that
94? It's 94.
Thank you.
All right. We have a motion by Councilmember Pierce, seconded by Councilmember Lehman, to award the bid for the 2018 street bond project for phase one to J&P Paving Company in the amount of $152,204. Is there any other discussion?
Mayor Pierce, may I interject one thing? I think it's important. I'm following the specification that I wrote for the city in recommending J&P paving. The council, you as the council, you can follow my recommendation or you can award to the lowest bidder. I must let you know that.
We hired you for a reason, sir. We're going to take your word.
Okay.
You did put that in the information.
Okay. That's right. I just wanted to make sure nothing was left unsaid.
But, I mean, I can tell you there's been lots of conversation, this council, the previous council, and any other council, that is the one thing that when we have CDBG grants, you always have to take the lowest bidder, and that's not always, unfortunately, the best. So.
Well, you're finding that when you're out.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for letting me interject.
Yes, sir. All right. So we have a motion by Councilmember Pierce, seconded by Councilmember Lehman. Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Adesanya?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right. So the award bidding will go to J&P Paving in the amount of $152.94.
How come we always have change? How does that happen?
I wish I could tell you.
And so,
the rocks or something?
Yeah, it's easier to make a mistake that way, that's for sure.
And that similar statement, as soon as all of this, now that this has been awarded, it's something that y'all will talk about
again
and get all of those cleared so we can have a start date.
I will send the city manager a notice of award on both projects when I get to my office in the morning for her to sign, and I'll distribute those to the contractors myself and start working on the contract documents, filling in the names and the amounts, and then city manager and I will schedule a time next week for pre-construction meetings with these contractors to get them going.
That works.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Moving into 9F, discussion and possible action on the Ben Zingelman Road reconstruction project.
Really?
We have Gilbert Salas, our Public Works Director.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. We have on the 10th, we had Mark go ahead and send the notice to default letter out there. And as of this week, since that letter's gone out, they removed 480 feet of sidewalk and 9 driveways. They continued demo. We had rain, was it yesterday, I believe? Rained a little bit in the morning. They were there on site, but then we started getting rain, so they went ahead and went home for the rest of the day, I guess. I didn't see anybody else out there. Today they were also working. Today's when they took out the 9 driveways. They ramped them up with the millings we have. So they have 10 calendar days from the receipt of the letter that we sent out, which makes it on the 20th. And they have to provide an updated schedule with crucial path to expedite completion, provide complete list of subcontractors with their subcontract amount as well as the subcontracts, including special provisions 002L and 394 of the contract. They need to respond to the city's response on RFI number 5 for rain days and a change order and provide a recovery plan. So that's what was outlined on the letter of default. And they have 10 days to do that. If they do that within the 10 days, then hopefully they'll be continuing working. But again, we're going out there and inspecting every day and keep taking note of the weather, amount of people that are there, and what they do. So.
And this is a prime example of why we were very concerned with them doing two phases at once.
Yes, exactly.
Gilbert, not to interrupt, but today when I came in, the backloader kept backing. He almost hit two cars. Why do they not have a flagger?
You see, that was one thing that was also addressed this week. And whenever I contacted, I sent two emails. And one of those emails was the first day that they were out there. I went ahead and let them know, hey, if you're going to have somebody out there, you need to have more than two people one for each piece of machinery. You need to have proper traffic set up. I outlined the reasoning was to protect our citizens as well as themselves. They should be having a flagger the day before yesterday, which was Wednesday. The day after I sent that information to them, they did have a flagger and somebody there with a hard hat. As of today, they had 6 employees there. Why they weren't flagging at that time, I don't know, but they have been notified in email form. So there's a paper trail on that I did notify them that they need to have everything safe out there and they need to have flaggers for the residents.
When I got home about 2 o'clock this afternoon, there was 2 of them sitting in the yard next door watching the other guys, the machinery work. And I had to sit there because they were blocking my driveway, which I could live with. No, that wasn't a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when the guy almost nailed 2 cars.
Yeah. So,
I mean, you know, it's on them. And I mean, but still, it's going to be on us, too. And you know how that goes.
Yes, sir. And I try to make sure that I go by at least 3 times a day for the most part, unless you know, I have prior engagements, something pending. So. But, yeah, we try to keep track of it. I also have my guys that are around, you know, when they're doing their work throughout the city. I have them kind of, when they drive by, let me know. And they're pretty good about coming up to me and letting me know or giving me a call and saying, hey, this is going on. They're aware of it. The Public Works guys are on top of it as well. So they communicate with me as needed. So.
Oh, by the way, I donated a tower to them. The tower things that have a little deal on it. You know, I do lane closures, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've had one sitting in my driveway for probably 3 years, maybe 4. It got, when they set up the other day, it got legs.
That is terrible.
Yeah,
so.
Well, the way life is.
All right.
Just get them done. I don't really care. If it helps them do a little better job, just get it done.
Yeah, and again, I've been keeping up, of course, my project diary and communication with them. And again, it's going through email format, so we have a paper trail, so what's going
Excellent.
On. And I am going to be on them. They changed the project manager,
yeah.
I believe. So they have a new gentleman out there. He's kind of new to this. The other update and the other item that I also let them know was about the concrete mailbox over there on Fred Hayes. They're responsible for that. The word that I got today is that Roy's working on it very hard right now. So.
Sure.
But that has been told to them. They have been reminded of that several times.
Okay, so are we going to do a public mailbox thing around on Fred Hayes? Or
yes.
Is that the post office that does that, or are they responsible?
They're responsible for setting that up. Yeah,
they have to install it. They have to coordinate with the post office, and they have to install it. We laid the concrete pad, and we made the initial contact with the post office to give permission for them to work with the contractor.
Okie dokie.
And so with by the 20th, or I guess it would be the 20th,
yes, ma'am.
Calendar day. So if they default again, I mean, if they don't provide that, then what's the next step?
So if they have not fulfilled everything requested in that letter by that date, then technically we have the ability, they've defaulted the contract for failure to comply. And then we would move to the next step, where if TxDOT allows us to go forward, then we end up working with the surety on the project. So kind of what they explained to us, you know, early on in those options,
right.
We default them, they stop working, they leave. We don't lose our funding. However, it goes into the hands of the surety company to, one, prove that they failed to comply and that we have all of our documentation, so we'll have to go through that process of basically proving our case, which is why we're keeping this paper trail. And then the surety company basically becomes our new contractor. So they take over the project and manage into bidding it out, finding another contractor to take over. They did inform us that that could take anywhere from 6 months to a year just to secure an additional contractor, because when you default a contractor, they are going to do everything in their power to fight against the city and say they were not wrong. So either way would be unfortunate if that happens and would delay the project.
So today they took my sidewalk and driveway.
But is the but as far as the surety company, as far as you know, are they contacting them to say, look, we don't want this, you know, we don't want it to come?
there, what we've been doing is we copy the surety company on every single letter that we provide to the contractor. So they are aware, and that's part of the documentation process that TxDOT said we need to follow, because you wouldn't want a situation where we default and surety have no clue about what happened. So we first informed them in January, and we have been keeping them up to date.
Okay, and have we had to pay anything else towards or to that project?
No, so as of July 2nd of this year, they hit the allotted time frame for this project. So they have been paying us $250 of liquidated damages each day. So the way that works is that they can invoice us for whatever work they've done, and we subtract the $250 per day for each day they've gone over the contract. So, for example, the last invoice we received from them was just for the installing the signs in phase three. So that invoice was about $2,000. They already owed us $4,000 in liquidated damages at that point. So at that point, we just keep it as paper. They don't get paid. Whatever work they've done now, whenever they're supposed to invoice every 30 days, they can invoice us for that. We will still have added additional liquidated damages from whatever the last date was through the date of the current invoice, and we'll subtract that from any payment that we may owe.
And that information goes to TxDOT. So, I mean, if they went to TxDOT and said the city's not paying like they tried to do last time?
At this point, they really don't have an argument there because it's liquidated damages.
Okay.
Before, their argument was that the city was withholding their payment and they had not run out of work days at that point.
So they're running negative, and they're going to continue to run negative unless they become supermen.
Right. They lose money.
Good job.
And so the new personnel that you're speaking with, are they more receptive? Are they caught up with all the fiasco that's going on, or is it just like starting all over again?
What I got from the gentleman when we met is that he was being filled in as to what was going on and being updated. However, in a relationship like that, of course, business relationship, it's going to take time to actually get a feel for what's going on. This is basically the first week. So far, everything I've talked to him about was at first addressed, and then I find out now that they were not flagging the way they were supposed to, so they're still going to need some time to gauge that.
All right. Are there any other questions for Gilbert? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, item 8G, discussion and possible action to accept Kimberly Keene's resignation from the Buildings and Standards Commission effective immediately. to whom it may concern, I'm sending this with a heavy heart. I have moved out of the residence for Kirby and therefore am no longer able to hold a commission chair. I know that this commission can bring great progress for an even greater community. It's been an honor to have been able to serve this community that I have loved and enjoyed so deeply, Kimberly Keene. So that is a vacancy. So I will entertain a motion to accept Kimberly's resignation from Buildings and Standards effective immediately.
I make a motion we accept her resignation.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Lehman, to accept Kimberly Keene's resignation from the Buildings and Standards Commission effective immediately. Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right, item 9H, discussion and possible action on appointing one regular member and up to two alternate members to the Buildings and Standards Commission. Currently, we have two alternate members. I don't know if anybody has been in contact with Mr. Cantu, but I have had correspondence with Ms. Aldrup, and she had said that she did have an interest in serving as a regular member. I don't know if Mr. Cantu has, and I don't have any other applications. Okay.
Did move her up.
Is that your motion? Is that your motion?
I'll make a motion that we promote her, dear.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. We have a motion by Councilmember Grant to appoint Christina Aldrup to a regular member. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Lehman, to appoint Christina Aldrup from alternate to a regular member with a term expiring October 1, 2020. Kim's name wasn't on there. I wasn't sure where it was at. All right, is there any other discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. And she was at the Buildings and Standards last meeting. She did attend as an alternate in the event that there was not a quorum. Lucky they had a quorum, and so they were able to continue, but it was a workshop meeting, so she did have great input for that meeting and was able to also benefit from the other lawyer being there, too. All right, so item 9I, discussion and possible action on appointing members to the Kirby Senior Center Board. I do not have any applications, Norma. All right, we do not have any applications, so we will move on. They are able to have their meetings, though, so it's not a situation where they're unable to have them. They just had a workshop meeting on Tuesday, so they were able to meet. Item 9J, discussion and possible action on appointing up to 4 members to a charter review committee. The Charter Review Commission. I will read what our charter says regarding that. Section 12.11, Charter Review Commission. At least every 6 years since the last appointment of a Charter Review Commission, the City Council shall appoint a Charter Review Commission consisting of 7 citizens of the City of Kirby. The duties of the Commission inquire into the operation of the city government under the charter provisions and determine whether any such provisions require revision. To this end, public hearings may be determined whether any such to this end, public hearings may be held, and the Commission shall have the power to compel the attendance of any officer or employee of the city and require the submission of any of the city records which it may deem necessary to conduct of such hearing, propose any recommendations it may deem desirable to ensure compliance with the provision of the charter by the several departments of the city government, propose, if it deems desirable, amendments to this charter to improve the effective application of the charter to current conditions, report its findings and present its proposed amendments, if any, to the council. Action by the council. The council shall receive and have published in the designated official newspaper of the city any report presented by the Charter Review Commission, shall consider any recommendations made, and if any amendments be presented as of such report, shall order such amendment or amendments to be submitted to the voters of the city in the manner provided by the laws of the state of Texas as now or hereafter amended. The terms of office, of such charter review commission shall be 6 months or sooner if a report is presented to the city council prior to said term of office. If during such 6-month term no report is presented to the city council, then all records of the proceedings of such commission shall be filed with the person performing the duties of the city secretary and shall become public record. Rearrangement and renumbering of charter revisions. In order to preserve unity, the council shall have the power by ordinance to renumber and rearrange all articles, sections, and paragraphs of the charter or any amendments thereto, and upon the passage of any such ordinance, a copy thereof, certified by the city manager, shall be forwarded to the Secretary of State for filing. If you recall, it does say that we need 7. The council has already appointed Stephanie Faulkner, Mary Lawler, and Jean Manning, so 4 vacancies remain. I do not have any applications here, so I don't know if the city received any.
We have not received any new applications.
All right, so if anybody in the audience is interested, there are applications for several boards and commissions out there. So if you would like to complete one, you can submit it to City Hall, and then that, when it goes back onto the agenda, because these will be there till it's filled, then it will be up here for review. So we will move, without having any members or applicants to appoint, we will move to item 9. Let me see what this is. I'm going to take a short recess.
Well, take two, please.
We'll meet back at 8:37.
That's pretty short.
It's 10 minutes. We have stuff to do. We will reconvene the regular meeting, and we are at 9K, discussion and possible action to schedule a joint workshop meeting of City Council and all boards, commissions, and committees. Saturdays, possible dates for this would be October 19th and October 26th.
Saturday?
The 26th, I don't know, there may be some Halloween events going on. I don't know if they're in the morning. They may be in the evening.
We'll all come in costume. What the heck?
Can.
Teeth. Damn it. It rings a bell for something.
27th. The 27th. The 27th, Kirby is.
And then I believe Spooktacular is St. Joan of Arc. Is on October 26th, I think. I think there's that.
So what you're saying is that's not going to work?
It will. I mean, because those are in the morning. I'm assuming it would be in the morning. But have you been able to poll the other committees just to see if maybe that's a...
Just planning and zoning. You know, the others will be planning and if in fact we wanted to just maybe get a representative from each of them, then we wouldn't necessarily have to post forms of those ones. We would just need to secure the form of the council. And then that would be totally representative. If we want to post it, so I think all we would just secure the forms.
I mean, personally, if everybody is able to attend, I would prefer that everybody attend, because since we're getting all together, there may be another member that may have a different idea or bring something else that we didn't think about or that their co-member thought about. I mean, if we can't get everybody together, that's fine, but I would at least still open it to as many people wanted from those commissions and boards and committees that if they wanted to attend, that we could just post possible forms.
Did you come up with
there's October 19th and October 26th as potential dates.
26th?
Yes, sir. October 19th or October 26th. And P&Z have, you said, confirmed both date possibilities? Okay. And I would presume morning.
Right.
Correct. Okay. So October 19th and October 26th. October 26th is the Saturday before Halloween, but most of those events, if anybody was planning on attending, are usually in the afternoon and evening. So y'all can general consensus of, or an emotion, which day?
19th.
Man, I guess
probably because you got too many things happening there.
I saw something this afternoon that I got on the 19th, and I swear I can't bring it up.
Is that your motion, the 19th?
I'd rather have the 26th.
Okay. All right. We have a motion for the 19th.
Man, I need to verify.
All right, so we don't have a second. All right, so that motion dies. Is there another motion?
October 26th.
Okay, we have a motion for October 26th. Do we have a second?
Sure, second.
All right, we have a motion by Councilmember Apodaca, seconded by Councilmember Grant for Saturday, October 26th. Shall we post the time here too? And we need a time. Do you have a time preference?
9 a.m.
All right. So that amended motion is for October 26th at 9 a.m.
And Mayor, it would be helpful if the motion would include exactly which commissions and committees are going to be asked to participate, either as part of the motion or so the council's aware and the public's aware that y'all are intending to invite, and I assume you intend to invite the Planning and Zoning Commission, the Building and Standards Commission, and the Economic Development Committee, and assuming that you have a working Charter Review Commission, you might include that. Okay. And then to the extent that you post these as meetings, but there aren't quorums present, I'm going to recommend the city manager that we not only post notices of meetings, but also notices of possible quorums.
Yes, that's what I mentioned.
Just to be on the safe side. Although, obviously, if we have a quorum, we're going to have a meeting. It's just an abundance of caution.
The four that you said.
Well, there's probably more than four. PNZ, Buildings and Standards, EDC.
Charter
Beautification and Recycling. And if there was a full charter review. However, there's that has to be a complete of seven, so I'm not really sure if
Six.
All right, so there is a motion by Councilmember Abadaka, seconded by Councilmember Grant for October 26th at 9 a.m. for a joint workshop meeting of City Council and all boards, commissions, committees to include PNZ, Buildings and Standards, Economic Development, Beautification, Recycling, and if the charter review is completed, that will be included as well. And we will post potential quorums to cover all bases. Council will for sure be a meeting. All right. Is there any other discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Abadaka?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layman?
Yes.
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 So if we can send all those communication out to the chairs and the commissioners. All right. We move to item 9L, discussion and possible action on private development projects on Springfield Road. Sharon has signed up to speak on this agenda item. Would you like to speak now? Okay, so we have our city attorney Mark Schnall and Monique will provide updates on this on the project.
Okay, so let me just start with a couple of things. You all were provided with two documents. The first one are copies of notice of public hearings that are upcoming for three projects or for three areas of projects on Springfield. So on October the 8th, when the Planning and Zoning Commission meets, they will be asked to consider a specific use permit for 1424 Springfield Road. And because this area is zoned light industrial, as previously mentioned, our ordinance requires that they obtain a specific use permit. Anyone in LI zoning needs to obtain that. So that paperwork was submitted and it will go to Planning and Zoning on October 8th for a recommendation. And the purpose for that particular project is dispatch trucks, storage of equipment, and materials based on jobs. Then after a recommendation is made at PNZ, it's scheduled to go to City Council on October 24th. The council will be the determining factor. PNZ will recommend, council will vote. Same meeting dates for the second request, which is at 1456 Springfield Road. And that one is also for a specific use permit for the purpose of operating a concrete batch plant on this property. And then the other item is for also for that same address at 1456. The batch plant is requesting a variance to the zoning ordinance because of height. And this would be to allow the construction of a new silo that's approximately 55 feet in height and exceeds the maximum height limit. Same date, October 8th for P&Z, October 24th for council. We can't discuss those items tonight. That's just for information purposes on the status of those projects. The second piece of information I wanted to share at a few council meetings ago, residents expressed some concerns about code violations and noise at various properties. So I did provide you just with a printout of all violations that have been addressed going all the way back actually to June of 2017 at the various properties on Springfield. And so most recent that's happened, I think, since that council meeting on the, and it printed out odd on the back, you have the actual disposition of the item, but on August the 26th, and a citation was issued for grass at 1424 Springfield, and on September 11th, another citation was issued on that same address for grass. But leading up to that, it shows you, you know, various times that co-compliance and a police department addressed either noise or business operating outside of hours or the grass.
So did we ever determine about the barbed wire? The fact that it.
Yeah, I don't know. Did
because it pointed the wrong way.
As to, we did have a discussion about that. I don't know if contact was made with the property owner about the barbed wire.
No, not at all.
Is there a reason that we haven't done that yet, or?
No, I don't know. I mean, I've been working with the code officer to get her out there to do that, but she has not had an opportunity to.
I do have something I'd like to ask.
Can you speak in the microphone?
Sorry. Which I was a little confused of the gentleman that were standing here, but there is a towing company also that apparently is already storing vehicles. There's three vehicles been sitting there now for 2 weeks. One for sure is a red Jeep. And what I'm concerned with more than anything else, it's sitting on dirt. And I'd like to find out if they're going to bring vehicles in there and store them, would not our ordinance that would require them to have either asphalt, concrete, or something, because obviously these are older vehicles and they're going to be leaking fluids into the dirt. And I'm trying to figure out how would we enforce that, or what would that come under? It's a transit situation where they're going to bring. Now, they said, and I'm almost sure that we go back and check, that they were just going to be there for a very short time. Well, these three vehicles have been down there almost 3 weeks now and have not moved. There's a red Jeep, and then an offset, there's two more vehicles, and they're just sitting on the dirt. And I hate to go on private property to find out whether they're leaking fluids or not, but I think our co-compliance officer should be able to address that.
Now, it's been my understanding that the towing company is going to be attached to Big Boy Hauling. As you know, that further up that Ackerman Road, there has been storage of vehicles. We've had that discussion with the code officer. She was supposed to reach out to the owner of that particular lot to find out what their intentions are, because we have not seen anything as far as requests for a specific use permit from City Hall or a certificate of occupancy. Or any other information as to exactly what business, what type of business is going in there. Unfortunately, the code officer is not here today, so I can't pick the brain as to what the status of that is.
Well,
I'm going to just refer to Mr. Schnall and ask if you can refresh my memory. We had a conversation about, because none of these properties have specific use permits or certificates of occupancy. They haven't gone through that process to get that far. They're all in the phase of getting building plans into my property. But there was a question about being able, because they own the property, being able to store or use that area for storage of something that they own.
Well, I don't have a problem with that, but what I'm saying is there's an environmental issue for one, and two, have they applied for any type of a C of O, or have they applied for anything of that nature that they can already start using the property? I mean, just because they bought it doesn't mean they can just use it without specifics.
They can't apply for the C of O or any of that until they actually
get it. Well, that's what I'm saying. So they're already storing vehicles there. Yeah.
I think that a property owner can put things on their property as long as, and they wouldn't really need a specific use permit until they had determined what operation they were going to have on the property. I mean, I would have to look and see whether we have anything in our code of ordinances that would prohibit a property owner from parking a vehicle on their property, whether it has, if we have an ordinance that requires there to be some kind of asphalt or concrete or something like that, then we can look at, and our code enforcement officer can use that as the basis to do an inspection. We can't assume that a vehicle is leaking oil or fuel without some cause.
Correct.
I mean, we can't just send the officer out there because we want to. The chief will tell you that there needs to be at least some level of probable cause. But we can make sure that if the property is being used for something and is not in the condition required by our ordinance to be used for that, that's something different, and the property owner could be cited for that. We just need to get our information so that we have the data that we need in order to take some action.
I distinctly remember, and I think it's on the tape, when the gentleman with Big Boy and the other gentleman that originally bought all the property, who has the far north end, he's the one that stated that he was going to be storing cars there for transit use.
Short-term.
Yeah, short-term. And, so what I'm asking is, okay, so, I mean, he could just do it until he comes and presents his business plan of what he wants to do?
Unless we have an ordinance that says otherwise.
We do.
We do.
Then we need to look at that ordinance and determine who the appropriate enforcement officer would be, whether that's the police department or the code enforcement officer or the fire marshal. Whatever it is, we just need to get the right enforcement officer to do an inspection and make a determination as to whether or not we have an ordinance violation. If we have an ordinance violation, I would recommend that enforcement officer follow normal procedure. Okay. If that procedure is to give a warning and an opportunity to let the person take care of it, that's one thing. If the normal procedure is to cite someone and bring them into this room when the municipal court is in session, that's fine too. I don't think we should automatically single somebody out. Just treat everybody with the same amount of fairness and give everybody the same amount of due process, but we have a right to enforce our ordinances. And the starting point for that is the enforcement officer, whichever, if it's Officer Thompson or if it's the fire marshal or if it's Chief Boyce or whoever it is, once the issue is the problem or the circumstances identified, that's where it should be referred.
Okay.
And I can appreciate us, not singling anyone out, but this is absolutely ridiculous. This has been going on for months. The resident that Sharon, she talked about the barbed wire being in the wrong issue or wrong place, that it's pointing the wrong way. We have an ordinance against that. I had brought it up again in August 14th, and if it's still sitting that way, I mean, there's just all kinds of things that I think that we ourselves aren't following up with. So, I can appreciate us not singling anyone out, but I don't think this is a matter of singling anyone out. I honestly believe that it is a matter of this tenant, if you will, not doing what they are supposed to do because they themselves with the former property owner were sitting right where, or standing right where you were. So they absolutely know everything that all of this is about, especially the other projects that are coming up. I mean, they're going to have their due process, if you will, to go in front of planning and zoning. So I don't think that anyone is being singled out. I think that this has been, you know, I think that we also owe it to the residents who have to live in front of or behind that. You know, there's a question about easements and all kinds of things. There was a locating company that actually now they have located utilities and everything else behind those fences after we sat here and were told there aren't any. You know, so there is just all kinds of conversations that we're having, but we're never getting anywhere. And this tenant continues to not follow anything that's happening. So I know that the residents are frustrated, and I'm frustrated when I drive by it every day going home from work. It's right there. That gentleman sat right where you are, or stood right where you are, and said that he wanted to be a good neighbor and he was going to do this, to the point to where our residents were told, no, you cannot cut behind your property because you're going to be encroaching on my property. But yet those individuals, residents, have rats and everything else coming into their home from all the construction. We had him say that, yes, there was a unoperable trailer just sitting there because he didn't have the means to fix it. That was something that Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge said, because he was storing limbs and everything else in it. So, I mean, self-admittedly, there is inoperable equipment there. You know, and I don't see that getting any better. Let's see, now there's citations being issued, which means that explained ordinance told owner citations would be issued again if it happened. So two citations were issued for the same exact thing that was not rectified, and that's just as simple as cutting grass. So,
well, Ms. Mayor, if I'm not mistaken, as far as these cars and stuff, we, the council, had this same problem way back when we stopped these car lots from parking on gravel and asphalt, and we made them move their vehicles because that was our ordinance.
Correct. So there is absolutely an ordinance that says you cannot park on grass. You can't do that at your home. I mean,
the only exception we have is Maley's, and that's because he got grandfathered. But anything that came after him is under the
he still has somewhat of a pad.
Well, you're right.
You know, but again, there is an ordinance that no, they cannot park there, or that they cannot, whether it's storing or what have you, there is a defined ordinance that says no, they cannot park on the grass.
Well, I think my takeaway, and I hope it's Chief Boyce's takeaway, is that Officer Thompson is directed to investigate this tomorrow and take appropriate action.
I'm not directing any employee to do anything. I'm voicing that this area has an issue.
All I'm saying is that's my takeaway. I hope it's Chief Boyce's takeaway, and he can direct his officers to take action.
Correct. Appreciate it. Okay. Thank you.
I think the questions about the easement would be addressed in the next item, the nuisance ordinance revision.
Yes. I just, Sharon, do you want to?
I would love to.
Okay. All right, just for the record, this is Sharon at 3110 Buzz Aldrin. She's one of the residents behind.
Well, I had some things I was going to say, but I'd like to comment. When I was here, I stated verbatim out of the ordinances what ordinances he was breaking. So there's no question in my mind what he is doing wrong. If he does not have a certificate of occupancy, I am telling you right now, he is doing business on that property. I see it every day. He is operating his business. He is advertising on his fence as Big Boy Hauling. He is advertising on his fence as Big Boy Towing and Recovery.
Sorry.
So he is operating a business out there, even though he was told he could not unless he had a certificate of occupancy. So that's your good neighbor that we have behind us. At that meeting, when John Wynn and Paul Daniak were here, they did say that he was going to be storing vehicles. There is a trailer that has been on that property a little travel trailer since I don't know when. There is a fuel tank sitting on that property. It is not on concrete. It is not double encased. It is not locked. Okay? Now, if you read the ordinance, if you're going to do storage of a vehicle, storage of anything, you must have an 8-foot fence, not a 6-foot fence like he currently has. Anybody on that block that's going to store vehicles is going to have an 8-foot fence per the City of Kirby ordinances. I'm more than happy to pull them and bring them up here if y'all are having questions on it. I've read them. I know probably more than y'all do because I've studied them over and over since May. John Wynn, a.k.a. Big Boy Hauling, as you said, is not keeping his property or our fence lines cleaned as he said he would. There are weeds and trash up against the back of my fence. My TruTech Wildlife has told me they're going to have to put 2 more rat baits along my back fence because the activity is so bad in the boxes. And I'm paying for that. I'm paying for his trash back there. I'm having to pay to keep rats out of my yard because he will not clean his property up. And when he was here at the meeting, he indicated about 8 times that he was trying to be a good neighbor. Well, y'all may have bought into it, but the residents around me and myself, we're not buying it. This guy is not doing anything he said he was going to do, nor what he was asked to do. Councilman Wilson asked him to take that gravel truck and take that refuse out of it. That was a month ago. It's still sitting there. He's done absolutely nothing with that. I had locates done this past week. I called 811 and asked them to come locate. And from 4 to 5 feet behind my property, my fence line, from side to side, it's now flagged AT&T telephone lines, and it's also been marked for the Spectrum utilities. So even though he argued his point and I argued my point, I hate to say I was right. I was right. I knew there were utilities back there. I talked to the company that did his survey. I called them, and the guy that I spoke with told me that just because a survey from my property from 1970-something shows there's utilities 10 feet inside my fence, that does not necessarily mean there are utilities inside my fence. That is why you call 811 to locate, which that's why I did it, to prove my point. That is a utility easement. He does not own that property. I can walk behind my fence. I'm not trespassing. He does not own a utility easement. He could fence it in, but he can't own it. And I still have to have access to the back of my property. Let's see here. After I had did the 811 locate request, I got calls from Exxon and from New Star Pipelines. And they were asking where I was going to dig, and I explained to them I was not digging. I was just wanting to know because of our telephone cable being shredded a couple of weeks ago because Paul Daniat failed to call 811 before he dug. So Exxon nor Newstar were aware of him digging, and that is a violation. That is a state violation. Newstar is 1,000 feet. And Exxon, it's because it's right there by my house. Let's see. Once again, that being said, Paul Daniak does what he pleases. He's going to continue to do what he pleases. It appears he has no intentions to follow state laws. So what makes you think he's going to follow ordinances for the City of Kirby unless you hold his feet to the fire? I don't know who has to do that, but somebody needs to do it. Let's see. They are going to be storing vehicles, and I already spoke about the ordinance, about the 8-foot fence, the barbed wire. That's also an ordinance. It's supposed to be going to the inside, not the outside of the property. Let's see what else here. There was talk that a meeting was going to be set up between Big Boy Hauling and the residents, and we've heard nothing of that. Not been notified of any kind of anything that's going to go on so we could have a meet with him. I don't know if the residents are just being treated like we're another drop in the bucket, that nobody really cares about us, that the tax base is more important than we are. Well, I pay my taxes. I do all my shopping in Kirby. I go to the restaurants in Kirby. I buy my gas in Kirby to help our taxes. So I don't see why I'm not as important as the developer or any of the people that are buying his properties. And that property behind me, it's such an eyesore when you come into Kirby. I cannot believe that y'all, you're not embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed that, that's what that looks like when you come into Kirby. Those weeds are so big right now, so tall, that it's just ridiculous. Now, for me to go out behind my fence, I'm going to have to cut down hackberry trees because he has not done what he said he was going to do. The ground behind my fence is so torn up, it's not level. There's huge rocks up against my fence. There's trash back there. There's gravel everywhere. I'm going to have to put on snake boots to go out there in order to do that because I don't know what's out there. So I'm just asking, why does it take like an act of Congress to get anything done? I don't understand. Do I have to call Jay Avila from the Troubleshooters to get him to come out here and ask what the problem is? Because anybody that knows Sharon Schuler knows that she's going to pick up the phone and she's going to do it. I don't want to do it, but if it's me or that property, it's going to be me. I'm going to save myself. I don't care about him. I want my property to be taken care of. I know my neighbors want their property taken care of. I know y'all want the property taken care of. And one of the main reasons that nobody wants to get on any committees or volunteer for anything is because nothing gets done. Your hands are tied. I want to get on a committee, but why? So everybody can go, well, they don't do anything. We ask them to do stuff and nothing ever gets done. And Monique, we want you to be a good city manager. Hold his feet to the fire. Those guys are just, they're liars. It's been proven. I mean, they're liars. They say whatever they think you want to hear, and then they blow you off because that's exactly what they've done. Councilman Wilson asked him. He goes, yeah, I'll take care of it. He hasn't done a darn thing out there, and he's not going to do anything because, in my opinion, John Wynn is a mentoree to Paul Daniak, the mentor. And everybody that he's bringing in, he's going to just tell them, do whatever you want, because that's their attitude. And I personally, I'm embarrassed. It's embarrassing what's going on behind our houses. You know, one of the properties is good and clean. They kept it very clean. I'm glad they're doing that. But once again, that property has their trucks backed up against the fences of my neighbors. I'm just saying, what is it going to take to get this done? We ticket them and we ticket them. Well, fine them. You know, why are y'all letting him operate without a certificate of occupancy? Why is he able to go in there and work every day? I see it. I check it every day. I've got cameras that I can check all this stuff on all day long. And all I'm saying is, please help us. You know, we're really getting tired of it. And like I said, if it's going to take me to call the troubleshooters to come out here, that's what I'm going to have to do. And I don't want to do it, but I will. Thank y'all. Oh, also, I do have pictures of the utilities that were marked, and I sent them to Lisa. I had pictures that I meant to bring, but I left them on my printer at work, so I don't have them. But I can, if you would like them, I'd be more than happy, I can email them over.
If you would email them over.
Okay, I can do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. All right, clearly this that property is definitely going on too long, and we definitely need to get that taken care of. So if city staff will get together and make something happen, please. And after the conversations have been had and people have gone out, if you can please recap, council, on what the recourse was. All right, item 9M, discussion and possible action, ordinance number O-2019-864, repealing sections 94.01 and 94.02 of the nuisance provision in Chapter 94 of the Code of Ordinances of the City and adopting new sections 94.01 and 94.02 of the nuisance provisions in Chapter 94 of the Code of Ordinances of the City. This is the first reading. July 2019, we reviewed the existing ordinance and made a suggested change, a revised ordinance incorporating those changes. I flipped the page. Mark drafted the included ordinance to address some concerns expressed by residents recently. Do you want to go over those or?
the concerns that were referenced at a prior meeting, I can't remember which meeting, but I think it was in August. I think it was the first meeting in August, related to citizens being concerned about why they were being required by our ordinance to maintain property within 10 feet of their property line, because that meant that they could be required to maintain someone else's property. And so in looking at Chapter 94 of our Code of Ordinances, it struck me that we should make some changes to make it clear that the requirement to maintain property outside of a citizen's owned property should be limited to the center line of a publicly owned parcel or a publicly owned strip of land, like an alley or a right-of-way or an easement, if the easement is owned by a public entity. Most easements are not owned by public entities. Most easements are on land owned by a property owner, a non-public entity, an individual or a company. But the utility company, whether it's CPS Energy or AT&T or Spectrum or whatever, have an easement that give them a superior right to use that portion of the of that land. So the changes that are reflected in Ordinance in Ordinance Number 0-2019-864 are to modify 9401 subpart C subpart D, so that the requirement would become that the removal of trash, rubbish, discarded furniture, household appliances, or objectionable, unsightly, and unsanitary manner be on the owned property of a resident or citizen and to the center line of any publicly owned alley, public right-of-way, or publicly owned easement adjacent to their property. And similarly, the requirement not to let weeds, grass, brush be greater than 12 inches above grade also be on the property and to the center line of any publicly owned alley, public right-of-way, or publicly owned easements. And then there, I think there's a reference to those provisions in 9402, so that's why I just kept that in here as part of this repeal and adopt new language. I know this is just a small step. I heard Ms. Schuler, and I can appreciate the frustration. The question about easements and what you get when you call 811 is really beyond the scope of this discussion, but I think it's informative to Chief Boyce and to our code enforcement officer as part of their work going forward. Right now, that's a summary of the proposed, the changes that are proposed in Ordinance 0-2019-864. That would at least clarify that a property owner is not required to clean someone else's property. They're only required to keep and maintain their own property and to the center line of a publicly owned alley right-of-way or easement.
So I have a question. Since we have some houses butt up against a ditch, so 10 feet, if it goes over the ditch, is that, are we saying that they just go to the ditch? Like to the area? Because Swan Lane has houses that butt up against the ditch, and it's very dangerous.
But is the ditch public property? Or is the ditch just owned by the property owner whose property line backs up to that person?
I assume it's the city's ditch.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. It says,
is it the city's ditch? Is there a deed of record saying that the city owns the ditch? That's my...
I only say because I had relatives that used to live on Swan, and they actually, years ago, got a citation because they did not go inside the ditch, even though they were slanted, and it's dangerous, obviously. So I'm just curious because I have a feeling that that will come up.
We've maintained it forever.
Well, and a lot of cities do that.
Not the one behind the houses. They do.
But
the residents
we did.
Do.
We did.
So okay. They have to literally get behind the...
Wouldn't you look at their plat on their property to see where it's platted, if it's platted into theirs, or is it just open property?
I don't know if the staff is looking at everybody's plat. I'm not sure.
What about the businesses, too, right there across the Benzinga? For the bridges, I mean, there's piers sitting right there, and that one side next to the ditch has got trees coming up.
Yeah.
That aren't good either way.
Nope.
Well, and Mayor, there is a distinction. I mean, what I have in here says alley, right-of-way, or easement. And if the ditch, from the way you've described it, really wouldn't be qualified as either an alley or a right-of-way, and if it's not... And easement, there are no easement rights in a utility company. It's not an easement. So that would be not covered by this, and therefore the adjoining property owner fronting on Swan would not be required to maintain this under the new wording. They would have been or would be required under the old wording that says you have to do something within 10 feet of your property line. And what I'm trying to do is eliminate that requirement if the council agrees, evidence of fairness, if you will. A property owner shouldn't have to do work on somebody else's property. And as far as city property is concerned, Kirby isn't the only city that maintains that kind of a situation. I'm confident that's done in other cities to one degree or another.
Well, even Springfield. Springfield is, I know that I think I was back on council, was the fact that the city cleaned it up or did it once and then was going to, you know, advise those homeowners or renters or whatever that they're responsible for that. However, it's...
Right, because when we acquired that in the boundary adjustment, we did...
Correct.
As a courtesy,
but then they were talking about that there's also... utilities and other pieces that, again, that they shouldn't be around or shouldn't forge around, if you will. So that's what I said. I just think that there's that even then, if it's not going to pertain to certain areas, then the city is going to have to maintain it, or else if the...
Well, if we go with a 10-foot measurement, then that pretty much puts it into the city's hands.
But that's what I'm saying. But the way it is, it's
the old one is that what we would take, not us, but the person. But if with the wording he has now, it is just a 10-foot and then to the center line.
No, it's not 10 feet. It's to the center line.
Just the
center line. Most of these easements will be 10, 15, or 20 feet.
Okay.
There may be a few that are 30 feet, but... We're not seeing 30-foot easements anymore because property is so expensive.
Right.
It's an interesting question. I mean, when the mayor says that there are utilities there, then that makes me think that we should look at whether there's an easement document and what the easement document says about whether the easement holder, meaning the utility company, is responsible for maintaining the easement to city requirements, like mowing it so it's not overgrown with weeds, cleaning it because it doesn't have trash. I mean, we just need to see what the easement document, if there is one, says. And if there are utility easements, there should be an easement document. It may or may not show up on a plat or on a survey. I've looked at the old plat of the area where Ms. Schuler was talking about, and doesn't show any easement on the plat. The plat is old, and it doesn't show any easements.
Right, and that's what she alluded to because she called the company itself.
But if the utility companies have put improvements underground, there ought to be some document of record that shows the boundaries of those of that easement. Either that or there's potentially a trespass by the utility company. I mean, we don't want to go there, but we also want to make sure that we do what we can to alleviate some of the expense and difficulty that the property owners have. So I view this as a way to address the concerns expressed, I think, at the, I think it was the August 8th meeting, I may have the date wrong, about, you know, why should I have to go onto Big Boy Towing's property and do cleaning? That it didn't make sense to me when I heard it, and so I thought this proposed revision to the nuisance ordinance would be a first step in addressing that.
Well, to that point, it was that the homeowner actually wanted, because it was actually wanted to clean up behind their house, because that tenant, that landowner, wasn't keeping his business area and was told, if you come on my property, then you're trespassing. So that was another piece of that. But as far as the ditch and the easements, I mean, the utilities, I mean, I think it's, I mean, some of the areas in Kirby are going to be even much different than this.
Yeah, and like, for example, the one, you know, Councilmember Pierce mentioned behind there along Ben Singleman, that area actually the city has gone out to maintain. There was an issue where we had to check with our stormwater engineers and TCEQ about those trees as to whether or not we could take them out.
But those are weeds. They're not trees.
Weeds.
They weren't there when that started. And then there's just like AT&T. Those trees in there were weeds that just nobody told them to do anything, and it just let it go until it looked like a tree. That's the same thing that's happening all along that back of that property. Now, for them, that could be a security issue, because that spot's only, could be more than 2 foot wide.
And about that, if that.
Well, and that's kind of what I was saying about Swan or anybody else. I'm just using Swan because I'm familiar with that piece specifically, but there's other ones. Wheatland has one off of Wheatland and Boatman, or Foxcross, sorry. There's a ditch there off of Boatman. So, I mean, there's several residents who have to deal with those ditches that don't fall under easement or what have you, but it's dangerous for them to go because they're literally could potentially fall in the ditch, you know, to try to get not only that, but several of them don't have access to the back, so they have to literally go all the way around on Crest to get that back that way.
And Mayor, there, one alternative would be for the city to identify areas like those you described, and we could specifically have ordinance language that addresses those specific circumstances. I mean, if there really is a safety issue with a property owner who doesn't have the proper equipment being required to maintain something, that's something that the governing body could exclude or accept from one of these requirements. But again, if it's just purely city-owned property not used as an alley or right-of-way or an easement, then even this revised ordinance wouldn't apply. Whereas the current ordinance that says you've got to do something within 10 feet of your property line no matter what puts this burden on the property owner. So I would respectfully request that y'all consider adopting on first reading the proposed ordinance that would at least clear up some of this confusion. As far as the conflict between a city ordinance that says you're required to do something on somebody else's property and that somebody else says if you come onto my property it's trespass, that becomes a civil matter. But we shouldn't put anyone in the city in a position of having to decide whether to try and do something to protect their property and being accused of trespass. And we shouldn't require them to do something that puts them in the position of committing a trespass.
Okay, so in regards to Mrs. Schuler's property, if they've identified that there is utilities running through their Spectrum and AT&T, so that may would... There's got to be, when they do that, don't they have to submit to the state or the county somebody that they run utilities through there and is an easement present?
In theory, yes.
In theory.
And my hunch is that there's a time, Spectrum is the successor to Time Warner.
Right, correct.
And when cable came to town, Time Warner was the main provider.
Yes, right.
And so there are probably lots and lots of Time Warner easements of record. But, you know, we don't know. It could be that because of the unique history of this property, having been in the city of San Antonio, the easement would have perhaps been done through San Antonio. But it really doesn't matter at this point because we don't know.
Well, that was another question, because our city limit sign before the boundary adjustment and before that sign was moved,
right
was
there,
actually
on it.
Inside, or that property was inside that sign.
Yeah, the point I want to make, though, is this. If I've got this correct, then, if it is a utilities and it's an easement, then it's up to this utility company to maintain that.
Well, it depends on the terms of the easement. Okay?
That's what I want to find out, because maybe...
And that's why I suggested, Mr. Grant, that that someone find out, is there an easement of record for the cable? The easiest way to find that out would be for, and it may not work in this instance, would be to try and identify the most recent deed transfer of one of the residential properties backing up to the property that front on Springfield.
Okay.
And seeing if that property owner would provide a copy of their owner's policy of title insurance, which on Schedule B should list a recorded easement. Now, the difficulty with my statement is, if these properties have been in the same family for two or three generations, then the Time Warner Cable easement, if it exists, is probably something in a generation of roughly 1978 to 1988, mm-hmm. something like that. So if there hasn't been an outside deed transfer with a title policy, since that time, then my idea may not work. But at least that would be a relatively easy way to get some information. The other way to do it is to, you know, hire a title company to do a title and easement search. That could be a $100 adventure. I haven't priced that in a while. It may have gone up. But I used to be able to get, you know, title and lien and easement searches for $100 from several of the local title companies. Just haven't requested any lately. But I don't want to speculate about who's responsible to maintain the easement. I want to know.
Right.
Well, and specifically, speaking of Springfield, there's actually bright orange marks right now all along that are showing exactly where they are.
I understand that. What I don't understand is whether there's a document that granted those easements where those flags or pins are, and what that easement document would say.
On my deed of my house, and we live on Allen Shepherd, when we bought the house, it did tell us that AT&T and Time Warner has it in my backyard.
Right.
So between my backyard and however far we could fence it, but we could not build anything
right.
that was
on
top.
Right.
Then Grandi Communication came in,
right.
and that's why we all have the little green boxes in our front yard now, because they went through the front yard. But I know, and we're just a block over from where they are, Time Warner and AT&T have it directly through our backyards.
And the reason I suggest
that... it's on our deed.
The reason I suggested going to the owner title policy is because many deeds do not specifically list the easements. They simply say, I mean, I'm working on a deed right now on a big dollar transaction, and the buyer, I represent the seller, so we don't really care, and the buyer's going to accept a deed that says all documents of record except liens and conveyances. And so it won't list all the easements, even though we have a list of, we have a survey that shows them. I'm not required to put that in the deed. But the title company is very careful to put those that they identify in the title policy so that they're not responsible. Either way, a deed could also answer the question, Ms. Wilson. You're absolutely right.
So on your papers?
My deed does. Number 13 says that I am to maintain 5 feet into the utility easement behind my fence. Utility easement is 10 feet out. I'm to maintain 5 feet. My deed says that. I brought my deed with me to the last two meetings. Y'all wouldn't look at it. I didn't bring it tonight.
Okay, and so interestingly, that's the center line of that easement adjacent to her lot, exactly what we're proposing in this proposed ordinance.
Right. So let's throw off the hook. Yep.
And I'm pretty sure AT&T has rights and they have documentation. I work for AT&T. I'm pretty sure there's documentation. And we have telephone utilities in
that. That it might also be Uber's cable in that easement. Although that some of that runs above ground now.
This depends. Yeah. And the spectrum does not run parallel. The spectrum comes along the south side of my fence line and goes out 5 feet into that easement. Spectrum does not run side to side. I'm Warner ran front to back on the other side of my property.
So what's instructive about what we just heard was not only the idea of going to the center of the easement, but also that the document that Ms. Schuler bought her house subject to or was part of the deal had language in it about who's responsible for maintaining it. That's why it's important to see the underlying documents, because they don't all say that. I agree with Councilwoman Wilson that you are not supposed to build on an easement, and if you do decide to ignore that and the utility company or the cable company needs to get into the easement, that's your problem to restore what they take out, because they're not responsible for what they take out.
So with these owners, they've put gates in and have locked the gates where the people can't go through and repair anything.
Yeah. So I respectfully ask that y'all consider the proposed ordinance O-2019-864, and let's stay on topic per the Open Meetings Act.
Well, Mayor, I make a motion we accept ordinance number 02019-864, repealing sections 94.01, 94.02 of the nuisance provision in the Chapter 94 of the Code of Ordinances of the City, and adopting new sections 94.01 and 94.02. Have I read enough?
Second.
Good.
We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Wilson, to accept ordinance number O-2019-864, repealing sections 94.01 and 94.02 of the nuisance provisions in Chapter 94 of the Code of Ordinances of the City, and adopting new sections 94.01 and 94.02 of the nuisance provisions in Chapter 94 of the Code of Ordinances of the City. Is there any other discussion? Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Yes. Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes. Councilmember Pierce?
No.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right. Ordinance number O-2019-864 passes for the first reading. All right, the item 9N. Discuss discussion and possible action on ordinance number O-2019-865, repealing existing Chapter 91 of the Code of Ordinances and adopting a new Chapter 91 entitled Animals to set out provisions as to animals, including an animal shelter, animal control officers, licensing, animal bites, and animal care, spaying and neutering, rabies control, adoption of animals, fees, enforcement, and related matters, and setting a fine not to exceed the amount set out in Section 10.99 of the Code of Ordinances for each violation. This is the first reading. In July, we went over
everything.
Existing ordinances. The ordinance that was sent to us, I had questions about and didn't agree with things that we actually talked about. So I had sent an email to the city manager regarding the microchip and licensing. So I don't know that piece, if that was something that.
I'm going back and listening to the audio from the three different times we talked about it. And I know that was in, I think, November, first recommendation, right, to take out the licensing altogether. Then at another discussion, it was, I think, the staff and the shelter talked about why they were interested in keeping the licensing piece, but then we also mandate the microchip, so that part was added to the section that talked about mandatory spay and neutering. But in reading what you sent me about what San Antonio does, I mean, we could take the licensing out if that's the preference and completely fade that out and only do the microchipping.
That works.
I personally, I mean, I think it's ridiculous to have both. It doesn't make sense to me since both of them say serve the same purpose. I'm not going to lie. My dogs don't wear their tags when they're running the yard because if they get their neck stuck in the fence, running the fence line, I've actually had, instances where a dog accidentally got stuck in the fence because of that. With a microchip, I mean, granted, eventually it could potentially a microchip could move, but at least it's always intact, so the dog is at least identifiable. There's animals at large all the time, and I would dare to say that any of them have a collar with tags, but a microchip at least would allow somebody, because not only city employees have, or ACOs or animal control officers have microchip readers, rescues and just normal animal advocates have microchip readers as well that could easily find out who a dog belongs to, or a cat for that matter. So I personally don't think that we should have licenses and microchips together. And I think it specifically says something only if your dog is, or cat is spayed or neutered at that point, then it's only waived, I think, $2 or something to that effect. So I went through the ordinance. I'm not really sure if everybody else did, and I just think it's important. I mean, it may just be about animals, but I think that it's important that, you know, whatever's said in here is something that everyone can go by. There's also something about feeding animals. If you don't let the animal shelter know that you're feeding an animal, we have so many stray cats. I don't know that anybody that's any human person can just sit there and look at a dog or a cat that is starving without feeding it. So there's those things. There's talks about abandonment. It says 120 hours, but then there's something else later on that says if the animal is not identifiable, that it's 72 hours, and identifiable is 120 hours, and then it becomes the property. But in the abandoned animal definition, it talks about the 120 hours or 5 days. So there's, to me, a few of the things that don't really match up.
So do we want to set this aside and amend it?
That's up to y'all. I'm just saying, if it was presented to right now the way it is, I wouldn't support it, because I think that having microchips and mandating somebody licensing their animal is Number one, it's redundant, but I just think it's another cost.
Well, how about I just make a motion we set this aside to and edit it?
Okay. All right, we have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by, do we want to postpone, not table, so that it...
Postpone.
All right. A motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Pierce to postpone the ordinance for animals. Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layton?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right, item 9-0. Discussion and possible action on ordinance number 0-2019-866, amending sections 150.15, 150.16, 150.27, 150.28, 150.32, 150.33, and 150.35 of the city's code of ordinances relating to building, mechanical, plumbing, existing building, performance and fuel gas codes, and adding sections 150.37, 150.38, and 150.39 relating to the 2018 International Fire Codes, 2018 International Swimming Pool and Spa Code, and 2018 International Green Construction Code to the city's Code of Ordinances, to adopt certain 2018 international codes and standards establishing certain building code and building related regulations and requirements, and establishing a penalty of a fine of not less than $500 nor more than $2,000 for violations with each day a violation occurs constituting a separate offense. This is the first reading, and do you want to speak on this as well?
In an effort to stay current with the ever-changing building code environment, the city has acquired the 2018 versions of the International Building Code, International Mechanical Code, International Plumbing Code, International Existing Building Code, International Performance Code, which really applies to commercial buildings, and International Fuel Gas Code, all of which the city has adopted the 2015 versions already, and that's what's currently in force. And now it is, has also acquired and has proposed to adopt the 2018 International Fire Code, 2018 International Swimming Pool and Spa Code, and the 2018 International Green Construction Code. This is something that cities do periodically. You know, I remember, and in checking my files when I was working on this rather lengthy ordinance, I found what the council did in 2015 when you last adopted a series of codes. The International Code Series is probably the most adopted series in the state. And I think the 2018 versions are the most recent versions available. At least that's the versions that the city secretary ordered and I believe has in her office. And so the proposed ordinance would adopt the 2018 versions of the codes that had previously been adopted, plus the three new codes that we have, I believe, the 2014 National Fire Code that would be replaced by the 2018 International Fire Code. And I don't believe we have either a swimming pool and spa code or a green construction code, and so these are new international codes that I believe staff is recommending be adopted. There are relatively few local amendments to these codes because of a variety of reasons, probably the most significant of which is nobody sent me any local amendments to incorporate into these codes. The council would have an option to, as you did with the prior item on the animal ordinance, You do have an option to defer adopting this ordinance until the fire marshal or the fire chief or our building official have an opportunity to go through at least for the fire chief or the fire marshal, the International Fire Code, and for our building official, most of the other codes to determine if it would be in the best interest of the city of Kirby to adopt local amendments. In the prior sequence of things, as I recall, there were a fair number of amendments to the International Building Code, local amendments, but relatively few, if any, amendments to most of the other codes. But that certainly is an option. Ms. Vernon, in fact, asked me about that this afternoon. There really are two ways to go with this. Since the city is invested in actually acquiring the code books, you could move forward with adopting on first reading this ordinance tonight, adopt it finally on second reading at your meeting 2 weeks from tonight, and be prepared for either the fire chief or fire marshal or the building official to bring to the governing body local amendments at a future time. Or you could just have that local amendment work done in advance. There is a new statute, however, that is now effective on September 1 that limits local amendments pretty significantly. At least local amendments that deal with building products and building materials. So there may not be a whole lot of local amendments depending on what the subject matter that is brought to our attention in the way of local amendments comprises of. Because under this new state statute, we're going to be limited by local amendments if there's any national model code that says something other than our local amendment, any requested local amendment, at least as to building products and materials. This is a function of the state legislature. But those are the two options for tonight.
So is there any reason that our fire marshal didn't?
Well, I was actually going to say he reviewed the local amendments in our current code, which adopted the 2015 international codes, and he said in the 2018 codes, the local amendments that we recommended are actually in the new international code now. The only piece that we would like for him maybe to take a look at is the section of the building code since it relates to fire sprinklers, because that's actually in the building code piece. So we did not ask him to look at that part in advance. We specifically asked him to look at the fire code. So that may be something to consider, because we did have a local amendment to the size of the building to sprinkle.
So would it be in the best interest to postpone this until he's had time to review and then come back?
That, or what you were suggesting, Mark, is that you could add the local amendments at a later time?
Yes, that's possible too, but it
pass it now. Figure it out later.
Now, let's just go. Well, I make a motion we postpone it until he's had time to review it and come back with a proper recommendation.
Because, I can't talk about it because you postponed it. Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Pierce, to postpone this ordinance number O-2019-866 for further information regarding the local amendments surrounding the sprinkler building size.
Well, I wouldn't limit it to that. I think that just postponing it with the interest of looking at any local amendments.
Right.
Any local amendment. I apologize. I thought that our city manager said that was the only one they were concerned about. Is that not what you said? That that's the only one he was concerned about? It just seems silly to look at them all again if he was already looked at it. All right, so we have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Pierce, to postpone ordinance number O-2019-866. Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layden?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Azadaga?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't understand this one.
Item 9P, discussion and possible action on ordinance number 2019-867, repealing Chapter 32, Article 2, Building and Standards Commission, and adopting a new Chapter 32, Article 2, Buildings and Standards Commission, finding the meeting at which this ordinance is passed is open to the public as required by law, providing a severability clause, and establishing an effective date. Since they actually had a workshop.
Yes, so the Building and Standards Commission had a workshop on August the 27th, we have representation from the City Attorney's Office present who went through with us our current ordinance, which I believe was adopted in 1990. So we went through line by line to make updates, one, in state law changes, and then two, to make this more clearly aligned with the rules and procedures that for the commission. So it gave everybody an opportunity to understand what the function of the commission is, the steps for scheduling hearings, for abating some of the public nuisances in certain homes or structures, dangerous and buildings and conditions, and then also the steps for notices that were allowed to the public. So what we did is really took exactly what's in the state law for the board and added it to our ordinance to bring it up to date. The only thing that we would need to change, and we'll just update that, is the first reading date listed on here was changed to today's date.
That's pretty straightforward. Mayor, I make a motion we accept ordinance number 02019-867, repealing Chapter 32, Article 2, Building and Standards Commission, and adding Chapter 32, Article 2, Building and Standards Commission.
We have a motion by Councilmember Grant.
Second.
Mm-hmm. Seconded by Councilmember Wilson to accept Ordinance Number O-2019-867, repealing Chapter 32, Article 2, Building and Standards Commission, and adopting a new Chapter 32, Article 2, Building and Standards Commission, finding the meeting at which this ordinance is passed is open to the public as required by law, providing a severability clause. I did want, before I ask for a vote, I did want to thank the Buildings and Standards Commission, the chair, Jack Major, for going through here and seeing the need that the board needed to understand processes and procedures, so they had a really good workshop. So I just wanted to commend Jack for taking the time to go through all of that. Is there any further discussion? Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layden?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Azadaga?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Yes, ordinance number O-2019-867 passes for the first reading. Item 9Q, discussion and possible action on ordinance number O-2019-868, making appropriations for the support of the City of Kirby for the fiscal year beginning October 1, 2019, and ending September 30th, 2020, appropriating money to a sinking fund to pay interest and principal due on the city's indebtedness and adopting the annual enterprise and general fund budgets of the City of Kirby for 2019-2020 fiscal year. Monique, would you like to?
So this is the first reading on actual adoption of the budgets for both our general fund, our water fund, and our debt service. Mm-hmm. I do have one question just that we want to clarify before we go into actual voting on this. This will be a voice vote of record that we have to document. And the one question that staff had just leaving was at the last meeting when we talked about finalizing the budget and the 2% increase, we wanted to make sure that we were all clear, is do we want to implement that as across the board October 1, or do we want to use that 2% to fund the new pay scale?
I believe that when we spoke about that, it was on the new pay scale to allow the department heads to evaluate, etc.
Okay.
But that was just my understanding. I don't
right.
think we did get
You're
an
correct.
Inquiry about will that take effect on October 1st.
Yes.
I wanted to make sure that was the
start of the year.
Okay.
Is everybody else?
When you're talking, are you talking October the 1st and that they will get their 2% raise?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm asking.
Okay.
The following payday.
We want to be clear that whether or not your intent was to implement that raise across the board on October 1st.
Yes.
Or January the
1st. Was to use
October.
That to fund a new pay scale. So when that is ready, you take that 2% and utilize it there.
Well, see, so you're thinking something different.
Well, October the 1st is what I was thought.
So now
that's what I thought.
So when we spoke about it, about the 2%, what Monique is asking is it across the board automatically, or is it to fund the pay scale to allow the department heads, when they're evaluating their employees, to go up to that 2%? And that's when we were talking about on several different meetings, that is actually the direction that we were talking about.
Right.
So now,
2% across the board.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Based off,
but
it's based off of the department heads.
You want to let
maximum of 2% to give.
But
out.
Yeah, but not as a COLA. It would be a.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's not. That was what the discussion was. That it wasn't a COLA. That it was a merit, if you will, based on that performance.
Hmm.
And that's what staff is asking now.
I got you.
What is it going to be? Like, to clarify, it was my understanding that it was to allow department heads to evaluate up to that amount.
I thought it was starting October the 1st.
That's what I thought.
And I think that's what she thought.
She's not here, so we can't.
I can say she thought.
It's not what I thought, but... Because, I mean, we had those discussions about, that it wasn't necessarily fair that everybody got the same increase if the performance piece of it. So I was saying from my standpoint, that was the discussion.
Well, I would say this, and to be very honest about it, I mean, we cut a lot of things and slashed a lot of things, and I understand it's not really a heck of a lot, to be honest about it. And we've had an increase in insurance. Some came up and some went down. So, I mean, what are they really going to net out of the deal anyway?
Okay, so then that will change, though.
Right, and I just want to be clear because I think that the understanding was different when we left the meeting. There were inquiries about that. So we just need to decide now. If it's a across-the-board cost-of-living increase, then it would take effect October 1st.
But
if it is to apply to the merit increase, then when the employees get evaluated at the end of this year, then the supervisors would have the option of giving them that amount.
But what is that? If it's across the board, then what does that do for merit increase?
That takes that out of funding.
But there is funding for that.
No.
No.
That's what I'm saying. So if it's across the board, then there is no merit. There is no increase for anyone based on merit. Every performance would get 2% based on that piece.
I personally think that they need the 2% pay raise.
I do too.
But didn't we discuss it not including the department heads?
It doesn't include department heads.
All the employees.
I believe that we need to give them their 2% pay raise.
I agree. What y'all feel?
Is this a general consensus, or do we have to make a motion? Since it's not specifically there, I don't know how to.
How would we
that's new
that?
Territory for me.
I make a. Well, you know, words if I make.
I don't think it's. There's not a motion there, so.
Approve the budget, you would be approving the amount. So So I just think maybe by general consensus we can know how we can
do that. Like I say, the insurance, they're not going to net even 2%. Even if they gave to everybody because the insurance premium went up. It's kind of like Social Security. Every time we get a raise, the insurance goes up.
What is your consensus?
And what did we do about our merit?
Well, I mean, all kidding aside,
it'll be the same thing.
Yeah, but if we had a bigger figure to play with, I mean, if it was like 4 or 5, if we were able to. But, I mean, this is really a minute amount of money.
So we have 2 for across the board.
I think they shouldn't. Everybody shouldn't get it at one time. No.
Okay. Okay. What do you think?
I agree with her.
Everybody shouldn't get it at one time.
It doesn't make a difference either way. What are you doing?
Y'all are across the board. Jerry and Sylvia are don't think they should get it all at the same time. Like
merit. So you're looking at merit. Well, then the only bad thing with merit and at this point is that you're going to have some who do not get it, and I think that every employee needs some sort of a pay raise. I mean, everything is going up, and if you're going to give, if you're meriting it and you have someone who is someone's favorite, that person's going to, and yes, I have seen it happen, so don't.
Well, then that should have been on the department head, but they didn't do what they were supposed to
okay,
do.
Okay, so, but
I think that.
But just so we know, the amount isn't changing, so that's not what we're consensus.
You're only going up to 2% per person. But and this way, you're giving everybody their 2%. I'm just saying.
Okay, across the board.
Across the board.
Merit.
Okay. Great. Yeah, you know, y'all keep talking about they wouldn't get a raise. Remember, look what we did on their insurance. We gave them a big hunk of protection out of the city's budget. It didn't come out of their pocket.
Quite some did too, yeah.
That potentially is a raise. They just don't look at it that way.
We look at it, it's one of their benefits from the city.
Right.
We opted not to charge the city, but we're talking employees who make, I mean, not very much on an hourly basis. If we're trying to keep up where we don't keep losing and losing and losing, and when we lose them, we retrain and we retrain and we retrain, and you turn back and you lose again because someone else is offering them a couple of dollars more an hour. That couple of dollars more an hour might have kept them here in the city of Kirby, and we didn't lose 4 months of training to keep someone.
But 2%.
I don't realize that. You got to kind of look at it that if this employee isn't getting this 2% because of merit, then he's not producing his job. And if he's producing his job, then his boss is going to give him his.
I think that's the way I look at it.
You know, and I was in business for many years, and I didn't give all of my employees a raise at the same time and the same amount.
All right, so the general consensus is merit. However, just to clarify, it doesn't change the amount in the budget. There's no.
Right.
Yeah. It was just the how to.
It was going to be distribution.
Yes, sir. All right. So now back to that. All right, so if, go ahead.
There is, on item 9Q, there is a specific motion.
Yeah, you got to do all of it.
Okay,
all right.
I have it.
I'm good. Read it.
I move to approve ordinance number 0-219-868, making appropriations for the support of the City of Kirby for the fiscal year beginning October 1st, 2019 and ending September 30th, 2020, appropriating money to a sinking fund to pay interest and principal on the city indebtedness, and adopting an annual budget, general fund, water fund, and interest and sinking fund of the city of Kirby for the 2019-2020 fiscal year.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Wilson, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to approve ordinance number O-2019-868, making appropriation for the support of the city of Kirby for the fiscal year beginning October 1, 2019 and ending September 30th, 2020, appropriating money to a sinking fund to pay interest and principal on the city's indebtedness and adopting the annual budgets, general fund, water fund, and interest and sinking fund of the city of Kirby for the 2019-2020 fiscal year. Is there any other discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Asagata?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layman?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Ordinance number O-2019-868 passes for the first reading. All right.
One more.
Item 9R, discussion and possible action on ordinance number O-2019-869, levying ad valorem taxes for use and operation of the municipal government of the city of Kirby, Texas for the 2019 tax fiscal year, providing for apportioning each levy for specific purposes and providing when taxes shall become due and when same shall become delinquent if not paid. Want me to read that, or do you want to?
So just to remind everyone, the city's effective tax rate, which was calculated by Bexar County Tax Assessor's Office, was 0.653366. The city is proposing a tax rate of 0.728626. per $100 valuation, which is more than the effective tax rate. However, it is lower than our current tax rate. So at this time, council is required to set the tax rate for the tax year 2019. This is the last of a three-step process to end the budget and tax rate process.
And on this, there are three different motions that need to be made and voted on.
Really?
There, yes.
I move that the property tax
this
rate.
This is motion one.
Motion one. I move that the property tax rate be increased by the adoption of the tax rate of 0.728626, which is effectively a 13.31% increase of the tax rate per ordinance number 0219-869, an ordinance of the City of Kirby, Texas, levying ad valorem tax for use and support of the municipal government of the city for fiscal year beginning October the 1st, 2019 and ending September the 30th, 2020, providing for apportioning each levy for specific purposes and spending when taxes shall become due and when same shall become delinquent if not paid, and providing for an effective date.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Wilson.
Keep going, dear.
Seconded by Councilmember Grant that the property tax rate be increased by the adoption of a tax rate of 0.728626, which is effectively a 13.31% increase in the tax rate per ordinance number O-2019-869, an ordinance of the City of Kirby, Texas, levying ad valorem taxes for use and support of the municipal government of the city for fiscal year beginning October 1, 2019 and ending September 30th, 2020, providing for apportioning each levy for specific purposes and providing when taxes shall become due and when same shall become delinquent if not paid, and providing for an effective rate. I will have our city secretary call roll.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Asagata?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. First motion passes.
Motion number two. I move to approve and adopt the 0.598626 per $100 valuation of maintenance and operation M&O for 2019-2020 tax rate supporting of the annual budget.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Wilson, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to approve and adopt the 0.598626 per 100 valuation for M&O maintenance and operations for the 2019-2020 tax rate supporting the annual budget. Well, our city secretary, hold on.
Why does this say 2019-2020 tax rate? Why doesn't it just say 2019 tax rate? I would ask that Councilwoman Wilson and Councilman Grant amend this motion to simply adopt the, instead of 2019-2020 tax rate, just say the 2019 tax rate. Because you're not going to adopt the 2020 tax rate until a year from now.
Okay, I amend my motion to read for the year 2019 tax rate supporting the annual budget.
I amend mine second to agree.
So, the motion, the amended motion by Councilmember Wilson, which is seconded by Councilmember Grant, is to approve and adopt the 0.598626 per $100 valuation for maintenance and operations, M&O, for the 2019 tax rate supporting the annual budget. Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Akadaka?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Mayor
Pierce. Yes. One more time.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Motion number three. I move to approve and adopt the 0.130000 per 100 valuations for interest and sinking debt services for the year 2019 tax rate supporting the annual budget.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Wilson, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to approve and adopt the 0.130000 per $100 valuation for interest and sinking debt service for the 2019 tax rate supporting the annual budget. Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Akadaka?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember
Layden? Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Item 9S. Discussion and possible action to ratify the property tax revenue increase reflected in the annual budget for the fiscal year beginning October 1, 2019. Do you want me to read that the House bill part?
No.
HB 319, House Bill 3195 of the 80th legislative session of the state of Texas requires City Council to ratify the property tax increase reflected in the budget to be adopted. This is a necessary step in the overall budget process that needs to be done before the council adopts the tax rate. This budget will raise more total property tax revenue than last year's budget by $316,429, which is a 13.31% increase from last year's budget. The property tax revenue to be raised from new property added to the tax roll this year is $21,160.61. Ready? We'll entertain a motion.
I move that we ratify the property tax revenue increase, which is a 13.31% increase from last year's budget, which is $316,429.
Second.
We have a Motion by Councilmember Wilson, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to ratify the property tax revenue increase, which is a 13.31% increase in last year's budget, which is $316,429. Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Asadaka?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layman?
Yeah.
Mayor Hill?
Yes. Item 9T, discussion and possible action on designation of one mailing address and one electronic mail address for receiving written requests for public information.
Mayor, I make a motion we accept one mailing address and one electronic mail address for receiving written requests for public information.
Resolution 2019-7.
I didn't have the number. I didn't.
That's right. All right. We have a motion by Councilmember Grant to accept Resolution R-2019-712, which is a designation of one mailing address and one electronic mail address for receiving written requests for public information.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Pierce.
So just if I may explain that this came from Senate Bill 944 recently passed in the legislature that requires us to designate one address, electronic and mail, to receive public information requests. So for what we are designating today is the City Hall address at 112 Ballman and the email address of our City Secretary, who is our designated person of public records for the city, and that's
peacock@cityofkirby.org. Yep.
And so if from now on, if anyone would like to submit requests for public information after this is approved, it needs to be either mailed to this address, delivered to this address, or emailed to that email address.
So in the event that that position is vacated, is a resolution each time?
Right. If we had to change the, and that's something we discussed, if we had to change the email address, let's say Ms. Cox retires, we change the email.
She's not going anywhere.
You look like you want to say something.
The other thing the council needs to know is that if this resolution is adopted, the information in this resolution needs to be on the city website tomorrow.
A resolution R-2019-712, a resolution designating one mailing address and one electronic mail address for receiving written requests for public information. Whereas Senate Bill 944, adopted by the 86th Texas Legislature, among other things, adds Section 552.234 to Chapter 552 of the Texas Government Code, the Texas Public Information Act, and whereas Section 552.234C provides that a governmental body may designate one mailing address and one electronic mail address for receiving written requests for public information, and whereas the City Council of the City of Kirby, Texas, believes that the designation of one mailing address and one electronic mail address for receiving written requests for public information will be beneficial to the city and to public information recipients in that it will facilitate the prompt receipt of and prompt response to public information requests. Now, therefore, it is resolved by the City Council of the City of Kirby, Texas, that the following mailing address is hereby designated for receipt of written requests for public information to the City of Kirby. City of Kirby, attention, City Secretary, 112 Bauman, Kirby, Texas, 78219. It is further resolved by the City Council of the City of Kirby, Texas, that the following email address is hereby designated as the one electronic mail address for the City of Kirby for receiving written requests for public information. That's pcox@cityofkirby.org. So I will, that was motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Pierce for Resolution R-2019-712. Is there any other discussion?
No.
Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Layman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Asadaka?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Resolution R-2019-7112 passes, and it will be on the website tomorrow. Item 10A, request by Mayor and Council members for items to be placed on future City Council agendas and announcements on city events / community interests. Councilmember Grant.
Well, having lived on Ben Zingelman probably the majority of my adult life, like 40-something years, I've probably gone through the intersection at Ben Zingelman and Ackerman more times than I can count. And having sat on this council, only second to Mr. Councilman Lehman, we've looked and looked and looked at it. This last one, the bid was $128,000 and change. And we all know that that got pulled off the budget because we can't afford it. It's just quite that simple. So that's that. But the other thing I'd like to talk about is I would like to see people grow up and find something else to do besides following our employees around and taking pictures. It's unsettling to them. They don't really need to be messed with. And, you know, I find it rather immature, the fact that it's going on. And if somebody wants to attack me for that, that's fine. But this person reminds me of a gadfly. Everybody look that up. That's G-A-D-F-L-Y. And that's my perfect definition of this. So let's find something better to do, and let's stop all the rumors. The money's going to be in the bank for Ackerman Road, because if I had $8 million, I damn sure wouldn't be sitting here. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember Wilson.
I do. October the 27th, which is a Sunday afternoon from 3 to 5, Kingdom Baptist Church is having a fall fest out in the vacant field, hoping that everybody will show up. We're having hot dogs and popcorn and snow cones and things. And then I will not be here the next council meeting.
What? Again? We're going to have chili for the hot dogs?
No, they're having hot dogs and hamburgers, or maybe hamburgers. I'm not for sure now.
Okay.
You confused me.
Well, there's food off again.
Past 10.
Anything else?
No?
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Abadaka?
Yesterday I took the active shooter class here, and Chief Boyce, I think it was a really good thing to offer here, and I'd like to see more of that.
Councilmember Pierce? Did he say no? Councilmember Pierce? All right, that leaves me. I did want to remind everybody that there are going to be notices of public hearings for P&Z for the Springfield property, so please check the meeting schedules. If you would like to have input with that. I post it personally on social media. It's on the city's website, so you can get information there as well. The also, in addition to October 27th, October 31st, there will be the Harvest Festival. Is that what we call it? Harvest, right? I always call it spooktacular or something, but the Harvest Festival will happen October 31st at the Senior Center. As always, they are accepting donations, hot dogs. They have a freezer, so you can, if you'd like to donate hot dogs and stuff, you can. They can use it as a freezer, candy as well. October, just want to make sure everybody remembers October 26th. Monique, if you can please send out the Evites, so that they can be put. National Night Out is October 1. Thank you. This Saturday, Penny Paws will be at the Kirby Animal Services in the cul-de-sac. Usually they've been utilizing the shade, and they've been going to right there by the Kirby Community Garden. So they've been set up there from 12 to 2 on Saturday the 14th. Also, there is a September 14th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. There is a Kirby Community Resource Fair located at 4932 Old Seguin Road. from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's got all kinds of different things. I'll just read some of them. There's over 20 agencies and services, representative flu shots, vision and other health screenings, mammograms, financial services, youth services, mental health services, ESL classes, citizenship classes, children's haircuts, bounce houses, slime booth, face painting, and much more. So that will be on Saturday. Again, there's various social media sites that have that posted too. I wanted to thank the city staff for the budget and the time that, Tina, that you've spent, the department heads as well. The budgets are never easy. We always know that there's other items that we'd like to spend money for. And I did want to thank everybody who spoke this evening. Thank you for utilizing the citizens' participation and speaking. And there are, is there any other event that's going on? Garage sale.
So our annual community-wide garage sale is October 11th through the 13th. Any resident is welcome to participate. However, if you'd like your address listed on the list that we'll publish at City Hall on our website, we need that information by October 4th. Contact our city secretary to give her your address. And then that leads right into our annual curbside bulk and brush pickup, which will start on the 15th of October and run through the 31st. It is broken into three sectors. That information is already being advertised, so you have to have your items out by 7 a.m. The day of the start of your week, that Monday morning. So please do not put it out until you get to your week. And do not miss the 7 a.m. deadline, because once they go down the street, they will not go back down the street. And the maximum is 5 cubic yards for free. If you put out more than 5 cubic yards and you'd like to arrange to pay Republic Services to pick up the additional cubic yards, they have to be notified by October 4th also to make arrangements for that.
If there's a reason that somebody needs to put out their bulk sooner than they're scheduled, is that something that they can call City Hall just so that? I'm only asking because maybe that week or something they're going to be out, you know, they're not. So I'm just saying, I wouldn't imagine it's everybody, but I would.
And that they have to call us for, but what tends to happen is that we start to get complaints mm-hmm. from other residents saying, oh, this house has all of this
yep.
stuff out,
right.
and it's out for 3 weeks instead of.
I'd like to see. I wasn't talking like way in advance, but I'm just saying because of the time frame, I just don't know.
They pull it out on the weekend.
Right, I'm not saying 3 weeks. I'm just saying, you know, if they're pulling it out to, you know, get ready for it, because otherwise if they're gone and they miss it.
Right.
I'm just curious
yeah.
if that was.
The staff, we don't particularly have a problem with that, but we will get inundated with calls from residents who have a problem with it being out and visible.
I'd also like to see it on the web page that if they have over their certain minute limit that they need to call and pay for the difference.
It's on the flyer.
Is it on the flyer? Okay.
It was the deadline for that to call Republic was October 1st, but it was extended to October 4th. And that was the one thing, just to clarify, if you're only making the agreement for Republic to pick up the additional excess, not the entire, if it's 6 or 7 cubic yards, it would only be the additional that you would have to make that arrangement.
The last thing that we wanted to announce is that we have been advertising for Government 101 Citizens Academy, where we're inviting all Kirby residents who are interested to sign up. It's a 4-week session that starts October 15th and runs through November 5th, where we would meet for 2 hours on a Tuesday. Our intent is to go through the city government structure and the various departments to talk about what those city services are, what those departments do, how they work. Thought it would be really good information for our community to learn about those city services and the way things operate. We are asking people to contact Tanya Vasquez to sign up. The classes are limited to 20 people each week just for space purposes, because we'll be doing tours. But we would like to have at least a minimum of 5 to 10, preferably residents each week, because we will be asking staff to stay for that. So we really encourage people to sign up. It could be a good opportunity.
I thought it was on the flyer. Maybe not.
In the lobby. Okay. If it's not listed on the flyer, the week one is going to be the government structure, city council, and city administration. Week one is the government structure, city council, and city administration.
Okay.
Week two is police. Week three is public works and animal services. And week four is fire and EMS.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And then if we can follow up with Ben Zingelman and Springfield area specifically, so that we can try to get closure or something going on with that. And if you could please just follow up with council just to let us know what the disposition or at least the start of that piece is.
I'm hungry.
All right. Does anybody else have anything? All right. Thank you, everybody, for coming this evening, and thank you for staying.